You're watching Fanboy Versus with your hosts, JD Church, Nicole Hale, Chris Triplett, and Chris McFeely.
And you are watching Fanboy Versus. I am your host, JD, joined by my amazing crew, Chris Triplett, Chris McFeely, Nicole Hale. Welcome, Bat Family. It is Fanboy. Yes, we are the Bat Family. Is this week it is Fanboy versus The Dark Knight Rises. The trilogy ends right here, folks, as we are going to talk about at the end of the show. I will forewarn you, it will be spoilerific as we will dig into all the details that surround this film, the previous two. So if you haven't seen Dark Knight Rises, you may not even want to watch this episode. I'm just going
to
say
because... If they haven't seen it yet, then to hell with them.
Hey, I watched it this morning, so fair, you know, fair. I'm just saying, you know, I went this morning. I don't like crowds, so I mean, if you've noticed, I always go to the movie like the day of this show, which is Sunday, because I absolutely can't stand large groups of people. And there were still a lot of people this morning. I went to the 9:15 showing, you know, in Oklahoma City. So, you know, yeah. Got there so early, the mall wasn't even open yet.
So that's early.
Yeah, I know. My friends were like, because I invited like three of my friends, and I bribed them by actually paying for their ticket. And and they were like, what time? I'm like, 9:15. They're like, what? Crazy.
There's a 9:15? What the hell?
Yeah, 9:15. The first showing, it was IMAX. It was the first IMAX showing of the day. So we'll talk about
it. Oh, you watched in IMAX?
Oh, yeah. Well, and it's not the IMAX 3D. So if you're, like, averse to, like, the you know, glasses and stuff, you don't have to worry about it. There's no...
Well, there is no 3D.
That's what I mean. There is exactly. There's no 3D. That was my point. There's no 3D for this film. Yeah. So you don't have to worry about...
I watched it on the XD, the Extreme Digital...
Oh, okay.
I'm glad I didn't see a Batman UFO flying in 3D. I would have been pissed if I would have seen that.
Yeah. we do want to say condolences to Chris McFeely this week, who is ancient now.
Happy birthday, Chris!
He has joined the 30-plus crowd this week. So now
I didn't know he was that young. Jeez.
I know. I didn't know either. I was... now he's that old.
I feel bad when we say, like, really horrible things, because it's like he's underage and he should
I know. I know. See, and isn't it amazing? We have, within one stroke, not only made fun of Chris McFeely for being old, but also made fun of him for being young.
Yeah.
See? Master stroke, that it is. But anyway.
Yeah, I start every day with that noise. Nice.
Yeah, you'll get that for, like, a year. Once you turn 31, though, you'll be fine. So, you know, just endure the next year.
On my 30th birthday, I worked a 12-hour shift, so.
Oh, wow. No. Yeah. I would not have done that. Would not have done that.
It sucked.
So, being that as it may, I guess we can get on to news things that are happening. If there are news things, we're post.
Not that there are a lot of them,
oh,
no.
God, yeah.
There's a little. Probably the one we've been tracking down the course of this week was Marvel slowly revealing images to do with their next Point One one shot. Now, we mentioned this last week when it was announced at San Diego. There's going to be a Marvel Now Point One, and like the last Point One, where it's going to be shorts setting the stage for stuff that's coming. And there are it's Nick Fury Jr. Yeah, just sort of tossing cards or dossiers at the viewer, and the covers of the dossiers were all question marks originally, and they were gradually released over the week, and they were revealed to be Nova, which I think we all pretty much knew was coming down the pipe, even maybe the new Nova, the Jeff Loeb Nova, the epic fail Nova, but a Nova all the same. Star-Lord, which probably shouldn't come as any surprise with Guardians of the Galaxy movie happening. Cable. Okay.
What?
Is he dead?
I'm sorry.
No, he's better. He got better just in time.
He got better.
Yeah,
he got all stitched up, and his mama kissed his
baby. He's an X-Man, so of course they can get better from death. I forgot about that.
Right.
Well, you know, he was in X Sanction, so he just got teleported away to the future last we saw him, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. An Ant-Man.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Probably.
What do all of these people have in common?
don't know.
Huh. Couldn't be that they all have, like, movies on the far horizon or TV shows in the making.
Cable don't got no movie.
Well.
But I would watch a cable TV show.
I wouldn't.
Wouldn't you? No?
I guess,
but see, cable's the one that breaks the rule in order to prove the rule. See, that's
yeah, we're not up to the fifth one yet.
Oh, okay.
The fifth one is the interesting one. But who the Ant-Man is, we don't know. My guess is probably Scott Lang, since we know he came back to life during the Children's Crusade storyline. So they may be planning something with him there. The truly interesting one is the fifth one, because it shows a picture of three characters. Wiccan from the Young Avengers.
Okay.
Miss America from Vengeance, which nobody read, but I did talk about on the show. And Kid Loki.
Yay! Huh.
So, we don't know what's going on there.
Is it Loki's Angels? Is that what we're getting?
I would love to watch that.
Actually, Miss America is also in Marvel Zombies, just to let you know.
Oh, cool.
Oh, she is? Oh, well, that's good for her that she's getting to do stuff.
Some relevancy.
Well, I'm not sure what's going on there, but I have to say that's the one that catches my attention most. I mean, because, of course, there's going to still be more new number ones and things launching between October and January that we don't know anything about yet. And Gillen is leaving Journey into Mystery, but it is at least nice to see some confirmation on some level that Kid Loki's sticking around and they're not re-aging him when Journey into Mystery is over or something like that.
That's a plus.
Yeah, it is a plus. That's like all that's coming to mind for news this week, you know? I haven't seen anything else.
Dude, Man of Steel trailer. Oh my god. Dude,
oh,
Man
yes,
of Steel?
That was a thing.
Yeah, that was a thing.
I don't know did that really deserve Man of Steel?
It's not even. Yeah, I don't think it even deserved.
I saw that trailer, and the only thing I could think is, man, I can't wait till Return of the King comes out. I cannot wait to see Return of the King.
Several people made that comment,
telling me that was Lord of the Rings music, and I didn't believe them because of how weird and dumb that is. But no, they were right.
Yeah, it's totally right.
And it is definitely Lord of the Rings music.
Is that?
I shouldn't tell it, but
I'm just going to throw out that's probably one of the worst teasers for a comic book film I have seen in a long damn time. Probably, actually, I'll say it may be the worst teaser I have seen since Superman Returns.
I don't even remember that one.
It wasn't exciting.
The little boy with the cape is awesome.
That was the only part that was kind of like, oh, that's kind of cool.
There's some nice iconography in it, but it wasn't exciting. And people really need to be excited for this.
I thought I was watching the laundry commercial. I'm just like, is this a Tide commercial? Because that's basically it.
Man.
It really needed Superman punching a giant ape, for God's sakes. That would have got me excited.
Yeah, I mean, the Superman flying through the atmosphere in the streak, it was like, saw it in Iron Man. It's not impressive, you know. It's like, that, you know, the sequence of someone flying is not that exciting anymore. I don't know.
I like that bit of it. He really broke the sound barrier. It was a real boom. You at least got the sense that this will be a Superman with a bit of whoomph behind him.
Oh, yeah. At least for that test shot, yep. What's the likelihood that's in the actual film? Who knows?
Until I see anything in a trailer that just makes me just want to throw up or something, I'm hopeful right now. Hopeful,
yeah, it's at least
say.
It at least doesn't ruin the film. We'll put it that way. I mean, it at least doesn't like make it seem completely awful. But it's just I think the big takeaway, like you said, is that it didn't fire me up. I wasn't like, oh man, Man of Steel. You know, it was kind of like, oh well, that'll be something.
Now that's not
another Superman origin story because no one knows how Superman came to be.
Yeah. Now, that's not what they saw at Comic-Con, right? I mean, they saw a totally different trailer.
Yeah, that's the same thing, yeah.
Oh, really?
No, I thought it was the same thing.
Okay. I don't have confirmation. I don't know.
I don't know. I thought it was
I do like the new logo.
I don't know. I don't know how I felt about the logo. My first reaction was, ugh.
Little ogre. Badass.
A little unnecessarily complicated, I think, was my only...
I like it.
His reaction. Superman. Bleh.
Yeah, basically. Hey, come on. I'm reading Action Comics, you know, you think we can... I think I get a little more credit than just, you know, completely hating Superman. I only mostly hate Superman.
That's okay. He's only been around for 70 years, and you've read, like, what, 12 comics? That's all right.
I could probably... Well... Yeah, I read some of the I could probably.
You like All-Star Superman, so I accept.
Yes.
I accept your.
Yeah, see, that's more than that's 12 comics right there. See, that's like 12 comics right there that I've read. They were Superman comics that I liked, and
so,
everything
so almost 24 comics.
Almost 24 comics. So if we go between Morrison's run on Action. And more. Okay, so basically, I like when Superman is written by Grant Morrison. That's basically. if Grant Morrison writes Superman, then I'm fine. Otherwise, I couldn't give a shit.
Hell with Dan Jurgens. To hell with Alan Moore. To hell
with
anybody else.
You know, I'll be fair. I haven't read a lot of Jurgens' run on Superman, and I probably should, considering how much I like Jurgens. So, I probably should try to go pick up some Jurgens Superman, and just see if I like it. I'm not going to promise anything, but apparently I do like Grant Morrison. So.
Sounds like it.
There you go. Anything else? So
anything else happened?
I don't have anything else. No, new
I don't think so.
Do we want to talk about the what happened?
Well, no, we do not.
I call that out. Nope, that is out of bounds. We do not talk about that. Sorry.
It's something, you know.
No, and I don't think the reason
about
the only thing I'll say is it's tragic, and that is all I want to say about it. There's too many other things going on around it, and it's really sad that something that is tragic has been turned into other things. And that's all I'll say. That's all I want to say. So, any other news?
Wow, you're really not interested in mentioning that at all. I mean, there's nothing to really say.
It's been said. Everything has been said. If you haven't heard it on the news, then you've been under a rock for a week. So it was absolutely horrible, and I don't think we need – there's nothing that the four of us could possibly add to at least the news bit of it that hasn't already been added. And there's such
– it's just kind of elephant in the room, so we need to just at least nod in its direction.
I think we have.
Get it out of the way.
I feel like we have.
It's awful, and I feel so bad for everybody, and, you know.
Yeah. I mean that in all sincerity. I mean, I think it is an absolute tragedy. It's absolutely tragic that – this film is going to be tied to that and those events, there's nothing more that I don't think that we could add to it that wouldn't be detracting from it, I guess, is my point. So, I mean, again, our hearts and thoughts go out to the family and the victims, and that's all I really got to say. So, any other news?
Not that I have.
Okay, very good.
Anyone else?
Going once. Going twice.
Is the new Hobbit trailer good?
Yeah, new Hobbit trailer. Totally not related to comics, but it was... Actually, was it new? I thought I'd seen that one. The one I saw. What was the trailer?
I didn't hear you. What'd you say?
It was extended. Hobbit? The Hobbit trailer.
Oh, it was a... Okay, there were...
I didn't see that. Did you see that with your showing?
I did, yeah. It was on mine this morning.
We didn't get that on mine.
Yeah, I can't remember. I was trying to remember all the stuff we saw. There was some extended IMAX version of, like, the 007 trailer, so.
We got the Tom Cruise trailer. Whatever it's called.
Whatever that is.
Tom Cruise, old man in an action movie.
Tom Cruise, can you believe that he's cool? If you can, go see this movie.
You can see one movie this holiday season. One man in a car action trailer.
I think after the first time I saw the trailer, the first or second time I saw the trailer for Neighborhood Watch, I felt like that I might want to go see that, and now it's like they have beaten it to death so hard in front.
I have only seen the whole story
from the trailer.
Yeah, it played in front of basically every movie I've gone to see this summer. So that's why it's kind of like, okay, I'm good, really. I'll go. Yes, Ben Stiller and his big ears can make another movie. Fantastic. So.
Hollywood. Right.
Yay. Da, 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 da. Aliens. Yay. All right. That said, then, I guess we'll move on to recommendations.
I guess so, yeah, not much in the way of that.
News stuff, yeah.
All the news came out, like, last week with San Diego.
Yeah,
I know.
It's going to be slow week afterwards.
It's always, like, drop week where it's like, oh, man.
Like, man, it's dead.
News overload. It's all gone. So, all right. Well, I guess we'll begin with recommendations then so we can have plenty of time for our Dark Knight review. We will begin then with Chris Triplett.
Yes. It is no surprise that this week I would recommend Saga because, my God, this book continues to be awesome. Mm-hmm. I am so glad McFeely told me to buy this book because I had no damn clue this was coming out.
Yeah, and from the beginning, too. Like, at least he warned us and, like, okay, you need to go buy this.
It's ahead of time. There's this thing coming out.
Yeah, this thing is coming out and you need to buy it. I like the preemptive strike on that because, you know.
Didn't wait till I had issue one and then tell you all. Yeah, by the way.
Yeah.
It's like there's this comic coming out, and it's going to be about this, and it looks like it's going to be cool, and oh wait, you know, Brian Bond's going to do it. I was like, sold!
He's like, pull out your wallet and throw it at him. Like, take it! And it's been that way, really.
Take my buddy.
And, like, you know, this issue doesn't change anything because, like, it's one of the only times in which I could say you can turn the page and on the first page see a robot taking a crap in a toilet.
Yeah. I mean, what comic does that?
Okay, hang on. Did anyone see Fiona Staples' tweet regarding this week?
No.
Okay, right. She said, I don't remember exactly what she said, but it was like something like, not getting any help from my writer or anything, and it was picture of an iPhone conversation where she had sent a message to Brian K. Vaughan asking, if the robots poop, does that mean they eat? If so, how? This is not urgent.
Nah, I think it did. I think someone retweeted
that. That's awesome!
And then Vaughan had replied, this is so going in the ladders page.
Yes,
it's such an excellent comic. I mean, there's nothing I can really say. It's just more of just you know the great little adventure that these characters are going on. This robot prince that McFeely loves so much that's trying to hunt these two lovebirds down. but the one thing I could say about this is this is the issue where we finally find out why Marco never pulls that sword, and why he should never pull that sword.
Yeah. Because for sure.
Apparently Marco is crazy as fucking hell. I think that's safe to say. Well, he has a bloodlust unlike anybody else.
Yeah.
Well, and we kind of see why they're together, because it kind of looks like Alana's the only one that can stop this crazy man.
Yeah, I mean, up to this point, you kind of get the feeling like, oh, this is the pacifist guy, whatever. And then it's like, And, another thing about this issue is it really takes a turn in a sense where it's like, oh, wow, nobody is safe. You know, there is no, real.
Last page shocker.
Yeah, I mean, there's a last page shocker on this. A character
that I think I could say that we all were really liked.
I was.
It happens.
Wow. And
I'm not sure if I believe that really.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking. Something's gonna happen here. I wonder what's gonna happen. I kind of felt like, yeah, there might be something that's gonna happen.
It better not hurt Lion Cat.
God.
Yeah. Dude, I thought Lion Cat was gonna get hurt at one point. I was like, do not hurt Lion Cat.
But going on from like the discussion we had about the last issue, I mean, there isn't even a great resolution to that part of the story. It's kind of like,
I was a little surprised to see it carry on at all. I didn't think that it's kind of like, okay, he killed that dude. It's a happy ending. As much as anybody who's been through that can have a happy. We're actually going to deal with the bureaucracy and the real life repercussions of you. Okay, I'm worried.
Yeah, I mean, it's. Yeah.
I think probably what'll happen is that this girl is probably going to become like his little sidekick or Girl Friday or something. I really freaking hope.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, that's like the best resolution we can hope for at this point.
Pretty much. Oh. But yeah, I mean, it's continues to be awesome. If you're not reading this book, is there any doubt that this will be like our best new book of like 2012? I mean, this has
it's a huge contender. And I have to say about the art too. I mean, we talk about that there's a lot of things, in this as far as, art goes, but in particular talking about the way like the female form is portrayed in this, or even bodies are portrayed. It's amazing to me. Like I was really like noticing that people are portrayed in a very sort of naked but not sexual sense, and that's like really hard to do.
Know what you mean? Yeah.
You know, like this scene with this like purple female who has basically like a thong thing on, and yet it's very natural without being like that fine curved line.
She looks like a normal person, despite being purple and wearing a leotard and then some kind of weird sun mask and apparently having a mouth full of razor sharp teeth. Otherwise, she looks like a normal person, like a real life normal shaped person.
Yeah, normal shaped person. That's like the thing that blows me away. And it's just like this comic has an amazing ability to portray, the art is portraying real people bodies. In a way that would otherwise be provocative, and yet in this seems very natural, which I totally applaud it for doing that,
Or even grotesque in some cases.
Yeah,
not really in this issue.
Yeah, but in others. So, I mean, it's just good.
That's
stuff.
A very, very beautiful comic. I've not got an issue of it yet that I thought just wasn't beautiful because it's amazing, and I can't even think what kind of planning goes into a comic like this because it's just gorgeous.
Well, the cast right now is huge and it keeps on growing, so it makes you wonder what other creature, what other kind of species we're going to run into again.
Yeah, and that's what's great is because we're in this like completely bonkers world. It's like anything can go.
Any chip creature.
And yet,
anything could turn up yet.
And yet it's a very human story. I mean, I think it's still telling something that seems very normal in the sense of it seems very human in that respect.
And looking at it right now, and I never caught this before, and I just realized it while looking at it, those soldiers that attack them, that one guy's got pixie wings. He doesn't have bird wings.
Oh, they all have different kinds of wings. That's what's so great, is that there's no...
I didn't even notice that.
There's no uniformity between what kind of wings. I mean, there's bat... some of them have... I mean, she's the main character. She's got bat wing almost things. There's... Yeah, butterfly wings, pixie wings, bird wings, I mean...
All colors.
All kinds of different things, which is interesting. It's an interesting way of, like, inputting diversity, it's another way of having diversity in a way that you wouldn't expect, So, fascinating stuff. We've lost Nicole.
I just love it that Marco, headbutts that guy. I was, waiting for him to headbutt somebody so bad.
That whole Marco scene is just off the wall. It's like, oh, man. Oh, my. Oh, my.
Yeah. It's not just that he's a good killer or a good warrior. Like, normally when you get, a fictional character that says, I will never unsheathe this sword again or whatever, it's just because they're really coldly proficient at what they do. But it's more than that. He's terrifying. He's clearly he's gone a bit Wolverine, a bit berserker.
He's got a berserker thing almost. Yeah,
it's like he becomes somebody else. Yeah, it's like he's not the person that Alana's in love with, and then it's like she kind of literally has to knock him down with a shot just to knock him out of it. And it's great.
Great, cool.
And she's like, what would I do without you?
Kill lots of people.
Yeah. I love that relationship.
There's nothing else I can say about it. It's just
great.
Hey, read this book. It's awesome.
Awesome.
And also, the robot's arm turns into a gun.
Yeah, it does. The robots can't. I mean, the robots are just fascinating to me. Just like all the. I mean, in particular, just like that. Like, it's a great question. Like, if they poop, do they eat, and where? And then it's like, because of the screen, you can see what they're thinking, and that's, even better in a comic book. You know, yeah, because it's like...
The baby rattle, whoa.
Yeah, I mean, he sees the baby rattle.
I don't know what that's supposed to mean.
Well, because he's
a, thinking about babies or what?
He's fearing death. He's fearing death because now he's got a child on the way.
So that makes sense, yeah.
Yeah.
He's just thought of the fact that there's a baby coming, yeah.
Yeah, and so that, like, totally makes sense. It's like those protecting instincts are now kicking in, so... Yeah, he's a robot with a big monitor screen for a head and a gun arm. it's a great.
It's like when the prince has a kid, will it be like a high definition TV or something? Like, would it be a better TV?
It comes out just like your Kindle. It starts out as a Kindle, and then you know,
it's like an iPad or something. Like one of those high definition super new iPads or something.
Give birth to an iPad, and then. Grows up. Awesome. Cool.
Stop.
All right, then, Nicole?
All right, well, it's no surprise I'm going to recommend the last of Marvel Zombies Destroy. Because, first of all, it starts off with like a little propaganda photo when you start off, and it gives you a safety tip. It says, safety tip, do not feed mystical zombie goats. They do not want your sandwich, they want your flesh.
Whoa. Mystical zombie
goats. Because the goats are the goats that pull Thor's chariot. What is it?
Transgisnor. Yes.
I'm going to be spoiling a few things here because there's just so much that happened in this issue. First of all, the goats. Well, in the first page, you find out they're the ones that ate Odin. Odin's gone.
The goats ate Odin. Wow.
They're like, but Odin was already a zombie. You said zombies don't eat zombies. Well, goats eat anything.
Nice. I like the logic. That's good.
So Odin is gone in the first page because the goats ate him.
Wow.
So, yeah, these goats pretty much cause a lot of ruckus and... It's a very violent issue, I'll tell you that. There is one point where Thor's intestines are spilling out and he chokes Loki with them.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that was a good fight. The Thor-Loki fight in this is awesome, especially when it involves intestines. So basically, you get to see... some more Marvel characters zombified. You have Bucky. Bucky's zombified.
That's really funny. That's really funny that there's a Bucky zombie in it.
Yeah.
I find it hysterical.
And let's see what we got here. Oh. I think my camera's a little slow.
Yeah, I've got no video for you. I'm sorry.
Your camera froze.
I promise, folks, next week I'm getting more RAM. It's going to be far better.
Okay, well, my connection is just a little different, but there is a twist to the story, so I'm not going to give that away, but at the very end, you find out the hero basically is the Eternal Brain, because
Wow.
Some zombies people figure it out. Let's just say his little suit contains more of a smaller version of himself, so in order to save someone, he grows a little bigger. A lot bigger, really big, and yeah. So he's the hero, basically, of the story. But there is a major twist at the end. I don't want to give it away, but it involves a nuclear bomb, Captain America, and Dum Dum Dugan. So
wow,
Dum Dum Dugan, come to the rescue is what I'm gonna guess.
Hope so.
I know there's going to be some people that have a problem with it because they had the same problem when they watched the latest Indiana Jones movie.
Okay.
Are you saying aliens are involved?
I'm saying a refrigerator is.
Hey.
There's so much that goes on in just a single issue. It's just a lot of fun. Like I said, it's pretty gory. There's a lot of fighting, a lot of good conclusions in the five-part story, and yeah, at least you're kind of hanging for a little bit more when you read that last page. You're like, oh yeah. So I highly recommend it.
Nice.
Yeah,
Awesome.
Good series. So they'll probably be coming out in trade here shortly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They like to do those in trade.
Yeah.
That's probably a good way to go too.
It's probably the best way to read it. So.
Awesome.
Because there's so many characters that new characters that were introduced. A lot of characters that were just in one issue. You can sometimes forget. Oh yeah, I forgot they were in the last issue because they make reference to it. So yeah, I recommend it in trade.
Sweet.
Yep. Awesome. Yay! I loved it. Loved the zombie series. It was great.
Awesome. Okay. Let's see. Very quickly, I will talk about Silk Spectre, number 2, out this week. yeah, it was very good. I think, you know, for one thing, I mean, Amanda Connor, awesome stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the art in this is just spectacular.
Why is she not drawing a monthly title that I'm buying? I don't know.
Yeah. Very good point. I mean, there's just some cool stuff. I mean, from a story standpoint, you know, I like this first bit because it interlaces with, like, a letter that she's written to Hollis and kind of about how she's doing, and that interlaces very well with the story. So you kind of get caught up with what's, you know, because when we left her last time, she was basically hopping in a van and, you know, striking out on her own, and now it's been, like, what she's doing. And, you know, in this issue, we really see her kind of really striking out on her own as, like, her own version of Silk Spectre. And really, it's just, it's almost like an early case. I mean, it's almost like the first case for her, really. Mm. you know, and so it's a great kind of story fill-in, but it's very much set within the time and everything, so it seems, you know, very plausible within the world, within the world of Watchmen, you know, per se. It's interesting. I think it's probably gone the farthest to really go out and tell, like, a story. Like, you could almost, I think in some ways, like, with this, you could almost, like, completely take it out of the Watchmen world, and it would just be, like, this would almost be, like, an early issue of, like, if Silk Spectre were to, like, get her own, you know, flashback series, like, this is what it would be like, instead of just being like a, you know, like this fill-in before Watchmen piece.
Well, it's a lot like the second issue of Minuteman in that regard. And
yeah.
It makes me quite interested to see what the other before Watchmen's are going to do now, because the first two series have managed now to actually go out there and tell their own stories and not just be, yeah, it's before Watchmen, it's... Here's the stuff that happened to them before Watchmen. It's like these are stories in their own right.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I mean, you know, you even see a lot of like the smiley face buttons and stuff, you know, making a lot of appearances in this. But it's a great story. I mean, she kicks all kinds of ass, so that's good. And I was quite shocked by the last page.
Yeah, I hadn't read it yet, so don't spoil the last page.
Well, the last page is great too, because there's a great reveal that happens, like, you know, on like the second to last page, where it's like, oh, you know. But no, it's the last page, which isn't too much spoiler, where it's like, oh, those are bare breasts. And it's like, am I reading a DC book?
Like, it is really? Rated M for mature.
Yeah. I know, but I'm still like, I was...
This is not the sort of, you find, you know, there was a dong hanging out for the entirety of Watchmen.
Yeah, I mean, I know, and that's what I'm like...
Of the seven issues that we've had that's done this and gone, by the way, titties.
Yeah, but it's just, it's like, you know, like, that was like a thing, and it's like, I still expect, I almost, it's like somewhere in my brain, it's like, I still expected this to be like within like the... regular you know, the Watchmen sort of happened like outside the confines of like a a DC sort of, you know, thing, but it's kind of still, it was just a little bit jarring. It was awesome. It was great. I mean, it's fine. It fit in with like what was going on in the story. So it wasn't superfluous.
I think the problem was that it was a superhero story where, you know, like Vertigo, you would expect something like that because Vertigo, it's not so much superheroes.
Mm-hmm.
But because it's a superhero, it's like, what? This is DC Comics.
I know. Yeah. I think that was it. It was just like, I didn't, and I read this like right out, like not long after I'd read Saga. I think I read Saga and then this.
But
so it was still
again,
like.
Then again, that's like after a world where Catwoman number one happened.
Well, yeah, still. But anyway, I mean, I was like, I don't mean to say.
And Catwoman number one.
Right. But I don't mean to say it was like superfluous or out of context. It was completely in context for what's going on in the story. and totally fits
in the background of a panel. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't want to like make too big of a deal out of it. I'm not. I'm just. It was just like, oh, okay. I don't know why it took me out for a second, but it was still like, is it DC? Is it? Oh, it is. Oh, it's
no,
mature.
I had a similar sort of reaction.
Yeah.
I think my reaction came a little earlier on when somebody just shouted, fuck the man! And it was like,
oh, yeah. Whoa, yeah. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that happens too.
Yeah. I think I was desensitized to the positive. You know, and then people start swearing a bit more after that. And it's like, okay, fair enough. It just took me by surprise. Because, again, I think it might be the first of the seven books to use a swear.
Yeah, yeah. Hey. Yeah. But, no, it's – I mean, this is continuing good stuff. This is definitely one of the ones of the Before Watchmen that you want to be reading. So there you go. Silk Spectre, number two. Check it out.
Surprising nobody.
Awesome.
No, yeah, really. Exactly.
Keeping Amanda Connor. There was no going wrong there.
No. No. All right, then. Chris McFeely is going to finish us off.
Yeah, well, okay, just before I go on.
Oh, it's that type of party, is it?
Oh.
See, now, there's this ongoing debate, okay? Ongoing debate. Nicole is adamant that she does not have a dirty mind, that somehow it is the rest of us that are corrupting her. Did anyone prompt her to say that? Did anybody even say anything remotely close? That would have
I've got those,
I was even thinking in that direction.
No,
you had to pull me in to get me to think in that direction.
I think we need like a Twitter or like a listener poll or something. Like, does Nicole have a dirty mind? Yes or no?
It's I think she's just trying to get another drinking role added. Is all it is.
Right. That's it's like every time Nicole makes like a semi-sexual comment. Unprompted, take a drink. Yeah, expect that listener poll later. Anyway, I'm sorry, Chris McKeely. Before you were rudely interrupted by a dirty comment.
Oh, God.
So before I talk about what I'm going to talk about, I just want to give a nod in the direction of Journey into Mystery 641 from this week. Now, you guys all have this. You guys
I haven't read it yet.
I'm not gonna spoil or anything. Just it's the last part of the storyline about the modern gods that are appearing in England, and Loki has been tasked by the All Mother to help other worlds stop them. And as of last issue, he's realized maybe that's not such a good idea. And it's the last one before the Thor Journey into Mystery crossover, Everything Burns, that starts next week, which is essentially the final act of Journey into Mystery. You're gonna wanna have some tissue, Sandy.
Oh,
God damn it!
Yeah.
No.
Oh. No, this is not. I mean, it's not bad, but it's not good. And I don't mean not good. Like, it's quality, always is. But it's like that's not supposed to happen.
I'm glad you kind of warned me because I like to read comics at work when it's a little slow. I probably should be reading this stuff at work.
Might want to save that for home.
I need to get caught up. I'm going to have to read Exiled. I haven't even read any of Exiled.
Oh, for sure. there's a neat twist that has actually been built into the premise of the thing all along that I never suspected. And I don't want to say any more than that.
Wow.
I could say something, but yeah. I'm not going to.
I'd take my headphones off, if you want it.
No,
it would be a spoilery comment, even if I were to say the one thing where I would encapsulate it all.
Okay,
all right, so, going to give some more attention to Captain Marvel, number one, from Marvel this week. Yay, look, it's Captain Marvel.
I think this would have been one we would extendedly reviewed.
If it were not for Dark Knight Rises, like, this would be our review for the week. Easy. I mean, it's just kind of...
Sounds like it.
You know, it is kind of sad that we can't go all the way through it, but I think we'll give it some good lip service here, so...
Yeah, we'll take it. Well, so this is the first issue of the new Captain Marvel series, which is to say the new series starring Carol Danvers, formerly Miss Marvel, who Marvel have... renamed Captain Marvel because, well, let's be honest, they have to put out a series called Captain Marvel every couple of years or they'll lose the trademark.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But whenever they're looking for something to slap the Captain Marvel name onto and create a new series using it, Carol's probably the best damn choice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is by, as spelled out here, yeah.
Yeah. This is by Kelly Sue DeConnick, who we know from Osborne previously, whose work we enjoyed there, with art by Dexter Soy. And the issue, the first issue, actually pretty much stands on its own. It's an introduction to the character and her new status quo. She's just it's not that she's undergone some massive change in her life or anything. Her new costume is just a new costume. That's all it is. And Captain America basically spends most of the issue encouraging her to take on the title of Captain Marvel.
But wait. She's got a new hairdo, too.
Yeah, but I don't like to talk about her stupid new hair.
What's wrong with her hair?
Actually, I tell a lie. You know, it doesn't look too bad in the comic itself, but the cover...
Yeah, the cover doesn't look right. I don't like the cover at all.
See, now, well, that's the thing. I'll get that out of the way first, then. I really prefer the look of the cover altogether. There's something... Mm-hmm. This, and we've seen several other covers, so this is by Ed McGuinness, although it looks a little bit more like Jamie McKelvey to me. But,
the art. There's nothing wrong with the art. I'm just, like, her hair...
There's nothing wrong. Oh, you mean the cup, the art itself. No, yeah. Her hair doesn't look so good on the cover.
Hair,
but
yeah.
We've seen all these covers. We've seen a couple of covers at this stage, and they're all done by Ed McGuinness like this. These quite bright, colorful, some of them, one of them's even been a Rosie the Riveter style poster with the bicep and everything. They really belie what the interior of the comic is actually like, and much as I like the covers, the interior art is fine. It's fine, all right, but I would prefer something brighter and more like the covers, and they really should change the cover artist to match up with the interior better. It's very scratchy and heavy on the blacks and very murky in the coloring. It's not bad or anything. You know, I don't have any problems following the story or telling what character is what. It represents quite a few different scenarios. There's a flashback to Carol when she's younger. I can tell it's a younger Carol. You know, they do this all fairly well, but I just wanted something that looked more like the cover, to be honest, out of the comic, you know?
I kind of felt the other way. I almost wanted the cover to be more like the interiors.
Well, I want the cover to be more like the interiors so that it's an accurate reflection of the content of the comic, but I would rather the comic looked another way.
I was feeling the same way. The art is fine. I mean, there's nothing wrong with the art, but yeah, I was kind of... I don't know, kind of hoping that it would be closer to something like the cover.
Given that the first exchange of dialogue in the comic is a pretty good joke, I just feel like I would like an art style that was a little brighter and a little funner and a little more conducive to comedic scenarios like that, instead of this rather grimy, grim-looking coloration. Yeah, I mean, the first thing here is, I think it's amusing that first thing I ever read by Kelly Sue DeConnick was a short about the Absorbing Man attacking Avengers.
Yeah, I love it.
Being fended off by, Maria Hill, Victoria Hand, and Sharon Carter. And then here he is attacking, it's the Absorbing Man attacking a Moonrock exhibit at the museum. And, it got off to a very good start where Captain America says, "What do you want a Moonrock for?" Moon powers.
I loved like her joke, which was basically that he's just mad because his name sounds like a brand of toilet paper.
He's already absorbed reasoning powers of concrete. But no.
She gets some good lines. It's like
There's quite a lot going on in this first issue. You know, you get a major action sequence with an established villain. You know, you get some really good interaction with Carol. I like the military, the soldiers joshing one another interaction that Cap and Carol have in this.
It was great.
We get Carol just talking in social situations with her teammates. I really enjoyed seeing Spider-Man in this, following up on the little flirty things that Brian Reed had done with Spider-Man and Ms. Marvel in her own series.
Do you notice that Spider-Man kind of looks like Andrew Garfield?
I think he does.
I think he looks like Andrew Garfield.
No, I didn't get that, but okay.
I was thinking Spidey was in it mostly because, you know, they did that pre-story in Avenging Spider-Man.
Right.
Well, it's a funny thing,
but it's like this book and Daredevil and Punisher were all discussed under the Spider-Man panel at SDCC because, I mean, these are really part of what, basically, they're the Steve Wacker edited books, but they seem to be like, they seem to be considering like Marvel New York. They're this family.
Yeah, and you can see that even in the very beginning because even like the it has like the Daily Bugle opening.
All these
yeah.
books have this for their, these are the things that tie these Steve Wacker New York books together. So, but they just seem to be referring to them to this to them as the Spider offices, and they talk about them under at the Spider-Man panel and whatever. So it's kind of a Spidey family book in that sense. So you know, Spidey pops his head in, but Brian Reed had. Spidey and Ms. Marvel actually go on a date at one point in his comic and discover they had no compatibility whatsoever. But
shocking as that
yeah,
is,
make that. You know.
Nice.
But they have this nice. There's the I get the echo of that here as well. You know, when they're talking about he's talking about her hair, and then they go to spar, and she just really puts a lot of welly into the punches and kicks that she throws at Spidey. We get some rather clever, you know, this is not just all new stuff for Carol, even though she's got, like, a new identity and what have you. Like, we get a character from her past, because it's one of those things that always comes up whenever you mention Carol, is that randomly she used to edit a magazine. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was something Carol used to do. I knew that, but it's a weird one. It's kind of like, where does that fit in on the history of stuff Carol Danvers did? You know, you know, she was an Air Force superhero. And she lost her powers to Rogue. Avenger lost powers to Rogue. Went off into space with the Starjammers. Came back, had the whole alcohol thing. Became a government operative. And then this happened. I said, at what point does magazine editor fit in there?
Yeah. One of these things is not like the other.
We all had odd jobs in our life, you know? Come on.
Successful magazine. So we get a character from when she worked at the magazine here as a member of the supporting cast. So it's use of her established history and everything. They're not pulling this stuff out. And then we get a little flashback to when she met one of her heroes as well, who has just passed away. And you know, that's the buy-in, that's the issue. It really is. It just sort of stands on. I mean, it seems like there's going to be some seeds that are going to come out of this, but just right now, it's an introductory issue that makes smart use of the character's history, treats her with a lot of respect. Carol is a character who has, I think maybe the list of stuff I just went through has shown that she's kind of all over the place historically. You know, there's never been a very good tight focused vision of Carol. And in fact, one of the best singular visions of Carol has come out of the Earth's Mightiest Heroes cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I like her a lot in that cartoon.
Yeah, she's very focused in that. She is a military person. Well, military woman? That's not the expression I'm looking for. She's a soldier, anyway.
Yeah.
Who is dedicated to their job and their duty, and she's actively splitting her time between her real job, and she's busting her back to be on the Avengers because she wants to be that good, and she is hardcore, kicks your ass. I mean, that just like it did with Ant-Man, that the cartoonist presented a very good distilled version of Carol. It's like, but the comics have never had that level of focus with Carol. She's bounced from thing to thing a lot. The last series, Carol's Ms. Marvel, was about following on from House of M, where she decided that in the House of M world, she was the greatest superhero in the world. And upon their return to, upon reality's return to normal, she decided if that could be the case in that other world, why couldn't it be here? And she dedicated, that's why the first volume of Ms. Marvel was called The Best of the Best. And she dedicated herself to being the best of the best. And then the series just sort of promptly forgot that was the point of the series. And she just had adventures. It totally lost sight of its mission statement in very short order. So if there's one thing that I would say about this, which is that although it gives a very strong, solid depiction of the character, it really tells you what she's all about. I get the vibe of the character that we've had off of Earth's Mightiest Heroes in this, in the present. We see what drives her as well. But there's no mission statement here. I mean, where are we going? What's happening going forward here? That's the thing. It's not that there's no game plan and evidence after this first issue. Now, that's not necessarily a bad thing, but it basically it is. I'm coming back to the next issue, but I'm coming
I'll keep getting it, but I see exactly what you're saying, because like it ends and you could just read this issue and be like, okay,
it could be a one
I'm
shot.
Done. I guess that's,
I'm coming back to the next issue based on the quality of what I've read from the creative team in the first issue and enjoying the character. But story-wise, there is no hook to convince somebody who may not be a swayed or may not have the familiarity with Carol that other writers may do to say, come back. This is where this is going, you know. So it's that's about the only thing that it's lacking. It ticks just about all the other boxes.
Yeah.
The character's history, interesting supporting cast, good use of their established continuity, moving the character forward, character relationships, a fight with a supervillain. It's hard to that you know. That's the only strike against it is that I see no mission statement in it, and I wish the art was more like the cover. But still, very much worth checking out. But it has actually sold out.
Yeah,
issue one.
Oh, it did.
Yeah, so good. Out.
Yes. So if you want it, better hope it still has some, or that you get it digitally. So yeah, that's going on.
Yeah, I got a digital copy.
This is a new series that's still only $3.
Yay!
Ultra pointing art when a new number one launches. It's only $3.
Yeah, that's a good.
What do you think about her costume? Is it grown on you anymore?
The costume's fine.
I don't like it without the mask. But when she went into orbit and then the mask, and it was like it jails for me. I'm good with it when she has the mask. Without the mask, it doesn't work for me.
It's very Batwoman-ish, though.
The mask is very Batwoman-y looking, isn't it? Yeah.
It is
at best a lateral change, but to be honest, it's not a lateral change. Obviously it is an attempt to design a more practical, realistic female superhero costume. That's a laudable goal. That doesn't change the fact that and it's even talked about in the letters page how her I'm not going to say her original costume because her original costume was pretty rubbish, and it surprised me that the Avengers cartoon actually decided to go with that costume out of the gate instead of going with the one they changed. I mean, I think we talked about it in the show before, but it's like very rare in comics is there a costume change that is actively superior to a character's original design. Where you can say that change has happened and that's done. That's going to be their costume. It's like and Carol is the only example I could really have pulled out off the top of my head. Like
that Miss Marvel black suit with the boots. Yeah. That's like iconic. I mean that's something that stands out. For
I mean
characters,
all the points,
I think.
All the points that the letters column makes about it being rather sensual and impractical are absolutely correct. But it is still a very cool-looking... Yeah, it was a sexy-looking costume, no question. But it looked good, and she looked good wearing it. And it's not, this new costume is not as good as it was. And, you know, that's all I'll say about that.
Okay. It's not, but it's growing on me. I like it with the mask. Without the mask,
practicality, trying to design these things... practicality is probably the worst angle to come at these things from, because practicality don't mean pretty.
Well,
I don't
mean
pretty
in a comic
like a feminine sense. I just mean pretty in a design sense.
And in a comic, when it's a fake world anyway. I mean, it doesn't have to be practical in the real world per se. But
I would love Carol show up in the Avengers 2, because I would love to see Carol in that in a movie. That would be great.
Oh yeah.
If that was to happen, it's probably going to be this costume, wouldn't you think?
Probably some variation thereof,
somewhere in between, I would say.
Cool. Very good. All right. Let us have time then. We now have 37 minutes in which we can discuss The Dark Knight Rises. I don't even know how we want to attack this animal,
as it were. I got a question for you. Let's just go around it.
Hang on. We just actually, before we start at all,
right.
Full on spoilers. This is a film with twists in. There are plot twists in this. This is not A to B. This is not a twist like Harvey Dent became Two-Face. This is not that kind of
twist.
Real plot twists in here that come close to the end. We are going to blow those because it's the only way to talk about the film to its full extent. So if you haven't seen it yet, really seriously, turn
seriously,
off.
Seriously, seriously.
Don't
seriously.
Have
to don't Darth Vader is Luke's father. Seriously, you need to turn around.
Yeah, and the only recommendation that I'll make before you leave is to say that, yeah, okay, you know, The Dark Knight is great and all, like that film, but if you want to do yourself a huge favor, see Batman Begins within 24 hours before you watch this film. If you do that, then you will thank me. We'll come back here and you will say, JD, thank you, because that was the best thing I did. Because that's what I did, and that made a huge difference for me watching it in the theater.
Yeah, I wished I had.
I'm sorry, did you have something else, Nicole, to add or another?
Oh, no, I was just going to say, before we start into our in-depth review, I think we should just go around and give like a 2 or 3 sentence if how we enjoyed it.
Don't go yet. Listen to this and then go.
Okay.
The non-spoilery review.
Not the non-spoilery review? Okay. You can listen to our 2 cents.
It looks like somebody's still in the room that hasn't seen it. Get the hell out.
Get the hell out of here.
Okay, go, person. Get the hell out of here.
Get the hell out.
Go watch the movie and come back.
Don't let us spoil you. All right, Chris Triplett, 2 sentences or so. What'd you think of the film overall?
I really liked it, but I have to say that I was disappointed in it.
Okay, Nicole?
It's a good movie, not a great movie. I think it's the weakest of the three, but that doesn't mean I still didn't enjoy it.
Okay, Chris McFeely?
Pretty goddamned incredible. Heart was beaten out of my chest at some point. Might be better than the Avengers, but need to see it again.
Mm. I think I'll go with that probably, I mean, I don't know if I would say better than the Avengers, but I would say it is a very satisfying ending to Nolan's trilogy. Like this is a very satisfying ending to this trilogy. You know, say what you will about it being a Batman movie or a comic book movie or whatever, but if you want to talk about it being Nolan's vision and this being the end of that, perfect.
Yep.
Okay. Now we will enter spoiler territory. So seriously,
Get
the fuck out. Turn off your MP3 player, your phone, whatever, however you're listening to this. Come back when you've actually watched the film. Okay, so let's talk about the movie. So overarching synopsis, if that's even possible, we'll give it an attempt here, and I won't go too long. The film starts 8 years after the events of The Dark Knight. You know, of course, Bruce completely hung up the mantle. I mean, He, you know, put the suits away and everything. I didn't remember from the last film. Was he hit in his leg? What was the deal?
I don't remember.
I don't remember. Did the fall do damage?
It must have. Because
Two-Fish shot him in the side.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did shoot him. Yeah, I remember that.
So Bruce is basically turned into a recluse. No one has seen or heard from him for years. He's basically completely backed out of running Wayne Enterprises. He basically just stays in, like, his wing of the house and, like, rarely ever leaves. If he does, it's in secret. You know, he's still, like, financing parties and some things, but he really just stays at home and does nothing. Batman has become a thing that happened a long time ago. In the interim, they've passed the Harvey Dent Act, which has basically undermined all of organized crime in Gotham. Gotham has become not a bad place to live anymore. But, you know, there's those that would like to see the act repealed, and the part of the film opens with, like, this party scene, and we get introduced to Selina pretty early, where she's working with the maid staff and, you know, ends up taking food to Bruce, and that leads to, like, their first meeting where she, like, steals the pearls. Like the pearls or whatever that have a tracker on them for some reason.
The pearls, you know what we're talking about.
but that leads Bruce to this whole thing where he's interested in finding her and, you know, what her motivation was, because it seemed like she was after his prints, not so much the pearls. So, from there, it's just sort of like this, like things just start unraveling, like from there. And there's multi levels of things going on. The basic storyline of what happens is we see the introduction of this Bane character, which seems to be somehow tied to the League of Shadows. There's some debate, I guess you would say, as to how connected he is with the League. some reports are that he was excommunicated, and yet his motivation seems to be very much in line. There's a device that Wayne Enterprises had financed, a fusion device, which was meant to provide clean energy to, you know, large parts of Gotham, if not the country or world, that was sort of mothballed. There was some issue where it could be turned into a weapon. And, you know, an early part of the film, we see, you know, Bane rescued and something to do with this doctor. But really, it's about this reemergence of, you know, Batman. Like, Bruce finally coming around to the idea that he might actually be needed for something. And I think the overall theme, or one of the overall ideas, you know, ends up being in the film is of hope. But maybe that's digging in too deep. It's basically Nightfall. I mean, I don't know how else to...
It's a little bit
it's
Nightfall.
It's Nightfall, yeah. And it's No Man's Land.
It's a little No Man's Land, yeah.
Yeah.
And I really liked that it was No Man's Land. I wanted more No Man's Land. I wanted the whole movie to be freaking No Man's Land. But I didn't get...
Yeah, because, yeah, I mean, you get all the Nightfall stuff because eventually, you know, Batman faces off with Bane and what it, you know, I said last week on this show, the only thing I required of the film was that Bane pick up Batman and break him over his leg. And if that happened...
It happened a lot earlier than I expected.
It did! It happened way earlier. Well, and that's where it's like... I think that's a brilliant thing of, again, of like the Nolan film, where it's... In some ways, it's not just Bruce's story. It's like the story of Gotham. And you see that a lot in Dark Knight. And it bridges over into this film as well. But, you know... Bruce makes several moves early in the film where there's this woman who's another CEO that he ends up... There's a whole deal that happens where basically Wayne Enterprises gets bankrupt. The whole reason they stole his prints were to basically make a bunch of risky trades and then leave Bruce bankrupt. And it ends up where Daggett... I was like, Daggett? Awesome!
Daggett, yeah.
Is Daggett the sweet?
John Daggett, not Roland.
Yeah, but still... Daggett, nonetheless.
Yeah.
You know, Daggett's trying to...
I was waiting for Clayface to show up.
I know. I was like, is that smooth-faced kid going to turn into Clayface? Can we hope? You know, that would be sweet.
And you're like, Ron Perlman shows up and he's Clayface.
Oh, that would have been priceless, but not our Nolan universe, nonetheless. But anyway, so the CEO, you know, she gets handed over to the CEO because she wants this fusion device to provide... free energy to the world. From there, it progresses and, you know, Batman gets broken. He gets taken to the same prison where Bane was locked up at one point. It is now Bane's prison. And, you know, so a good portion of this is Bruce, you know, trying to heal himself. In the meantime, Gotham basically becomes martial law as Bane basically blocks the city off, takes the fusion device, uses it, weaponizes it, blows up so that all the cops are trapped under the street, blocks off all the bridges, blocks off all access outside of Gotham, and basically tells the people of Gotham, you know, that they're basically under martial law, you know, that they're taking the city back from all the rich people. It's a sort of like, it's a very dark, evil version of like what Occupy would be, I guess. I mean, if you want to go that route, but...
Well, that's for later in the discussion, perhaps.
Yeah. But so as it is, of course, Bruce manages to work his way back up into fighting strength, finds a way back into Gotham. This is a very brisk overview, by the way, folks.
Like, you think about what you've said so far. I mean, my God.
I know. So much shit happens. but
I mean, that's the thing, though. It absolutely uses everything in its 2 3/4 hour runtime,
and it doesn't drag
like,
either.
Cut nothing out of that.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
really couldn't.
You know, in the meantime, Selina has been trying to find a way not only out but out of her life. There's some past that she wants to hide. We're never made privy to that.
Well, I think it should be obvious.
But, I mean, obviously, she's
got that record that's, like, huge. It's like, you know, an encyclopedia. So,
yeah.
So we know she's been doing
okay.
Yeah, but wait. wait, you're coming into this as a comic book fans. I had to explain some of Catwoman's history to the people that I went and saw the show with.
I think it's about
selling out all of herself. You know, that's just the last gauche way of talking about prostitution.
And
they talk. I think they talk about how guys are Holly. That I mean, she wasn't referred to by name. That's Holly Robinson. Was the girl that was hanging around with her.
Yeah.
You know, they talk about guys being a mark and guys coming in into their house and manhandling them and stealing wallets and all the rest of it. Mm-hmm. It's pretty obvious. They just don't. They're just not tacky about it.
Yeah. I know one of Brian's thing, you know, I talked to Brian about the film after, and his thing about Selena was they felt like they didn't flesh out her origin enough. You know, how was she able to fight all these guys? I don't think that's important, and I think it's almost...
It's really not.
Did they even explain that in year one? She just, like, beats the crap out of people.
She's just a prostitute that can kick ass.
Just learned to take care of herself on the streets. That's it in a nunchuck.
And I think I think for that part, I think the more mysterious that her background, the more mysterious and elusive her background is, the better that character is, because when you get to that final point, we'll get to that point. We're almost to that point in a second. But anyway, there's a point at which she basically could come or go. She could leave, or she could stay. And
well, it's like I had this called that this was what this was. That was how her arc in the film was going to go. But I figured it was going to come when Bane had Batman up and ready to bring him down.
Oh, no, sir. Come and stay with him. No. Yeah.
Technically, that's what happened. It just wasn't from being Brooke.
Because she made so many flip-flops throughout the film. It's like you get to that point, and you're really like, now she could go. You know, it's like, I mean, you have like a moment where it's
the crap. Yeah, she.
You know, she could really leave. You know, and I think if you know too much about her background, I think that would sway you one way or the other. You know, and I think but even at that, I think somewhere in the back of your mind, you're like, she's gonna stay. She's gotta, you know.
Like Nolan doesn't hate us. You know, he's
yeah,
give us
exactly.
A
you know? So
we're not getting the city in.
So Bruce fights his way back into the city. Meanwhile,
I want to ask you guys a question about this. Okay, so the reason Selena helps Bruce for a chunk of this is because he promises her something that she's been looking for, which is it's just called the clean slate, which is a computer program that you can like a virus that you can send into the internet and it'll wipe out every trace of your identity and your history from the world's computer systems. Like you will cease to be.
Right.
Okay. Now, does this seem incredibly friggin' familiar to anybody else? Because I am sure I saw or read something that had exactly.
It seems like something that happened. Yeah, it seems like it's happened in like a comic or somewhere before.
Very recently, someone was looking for it,
but I don't know what.
But it actually didn't exist.
Yeah.
I don't remember who, what, or where, but it happened. And it's annoying me.
Yeah.
Really?
I don't remember offhand.
Something for Catwoman. Like, it could be in a Catwoman comic. That just seems like something to do there.
Okay. So, inevitably, Bruce fights his way out of the prison. Finally, you know, in a moment of revelation, I guess. Finally drags his way out of the prison. Makes his way back to Gotham. And teams up with the group of police officers and underground fighters who have sort of been trying to find a way to both find and defuse the bomb, because we find out that this bomb that Bane's been carting around actually has like a built-in timer where it will degrade to a certain point, where it will just explode on its own without anyone setting it off.
Huh? 5 months that it had before it was going to be
degrade. Yeah, three or five, somewhere in there. Yeah,
because like they were there for a while. This movie doesn't like take place in like a couple days. It's like
This is a long in terms of time going by, a lot goes on. And then you basically have this, you know, your final climactic fight where you know Bruce as Batman goes in to try to find Fox and try to find Tate, who is this other CEO who. Is going to help them with, you know, getting the fusion device back to the back to the place where it was built, essentially, so it can be hooked back up and it won't explode. And through the, you know, and we have, of course, one thing that we asked for was that we get a cameo, and we got the cameo that we asked for. Yep. As Scarecrow showed up once again in this film as the imperious judge, as it were, offering people sentences of either death or exile. If you choose,
I do sort of wish he was wearing like a raggedy old scarecrow.
Yeah, it would have been
awesome, because I did not expect that to happen at all. Because we'd already had at this point the surprise return cameo from Liam Neeson.
Yeah, I know, and we had already seen.
I tweeted like a couple of days before seeing it that I would like to see some kind of villain return type dealy, like we had the brief cameo of Scarecrow in Dark Knight. But it was like there's nobody left from Dark Knight to have a cameo.
The
thing is, the one with Liam Neeson, if you looked on IMDb or if you looked through any of the discussion board stuff, that he was there.
Which is why I didn't do that.
I got spoiled on it back months ago because I accidentally read it and I was like, oh shit, well, this could be awesome anyway. Yeah.
There's always the possibility that it could have been a flashback, you know, with him in it.
Right.
I haven't heard about it anyway, but that was always a possibility.
There's an earlier bit in this film. I'm sorry, Nicole, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, you know, with him being in the film, it upped it a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
In my opinion.
I'm sure
it did. I love that man.
I know that you do.
His children.
Yeah. But
that 8-year-old man's children. Good luck.
Right.
I watch his babies.
But there was an earlier part in the film where, you know, they keep talking about Bane, and Bane even mentions how he was born in darkness. When he's fighting Batman, he mentions how he was born in darkness and, you know, was born in this prison. So we get that bit, and then there's a later bit where they talk about the child that was, you know, in the prison and that was Bane. That Bane was essentially born in the prison, and Bruce sort of threw a vision of Ra's al Ghul.
Like, so much pain or something.
Yeah.
Just a vision.
He and Ra's basically tells him that Bane is his son, and so Bruce kind of, you know, goes along with that that story.
I think the hilarious thing though is that this is another one of those things. It's like The Dark Knight. It's like you go with it at the time as you're watching the film, but when you stop and actually start to pull it apart after you've finished watching the film, it's like Bruce only knows that the child that escaped the prison is the child of Ra's al Ghul because he dreamed that Ra's al Ghul's ghost came back and told him.
That is one problem I had.
Well, I thought the other inmates told him the story. I thought
they never said it was Ra's al Ghul's child.
But he put the pieces together. I think
he remembered him. Like, I once had a wife and a child.
Yeah, and that's what I
kind of start piecing it together.
And that's what I took it as. Like I took it as, you know, the thing I don't like about this version of Batman is he's not as much of like the detective Batman that I like. And, you know, this was one of those things where it's like Bruce did kind of a detective-y thing because he put some pieces together. He just put them together in the wrong order is the problem, as we see.
Do you blame him in putting them in that order?
No, not at all.
Logical conclusion?
No, I mean, it makes sense.
With this information, that's where you would say it should go.
He puts them together in the wrong order because he makes the assumption that Bane is Ra's child. And because in something that I actually figured out way early in the film, and we probably several of us did for different reasons.
Yeah, I did.
Tate is actually Talia al Ghul, actually Ra's daughter. And in a brilliant moment, like out of nowhere, you know, stabs Bruce and begins the race for the bomb. The film ends with this moment where, basically Batman has a choice. You know, they try to disarm the bomb. They can't. The place where the bomb would go is destroyed. And so they've got this ticking bomb, and the only thing Batman can think to do is to load it up onto the Bat, which is his flying machine thing.
His UFO is what I like to call
his
it.
His UFO. And fly it out. Fly it out into the bay, essentially, and let it go off there. And, of course, he can't jump off because it's established earlier in the film that it doesn't have an autopilot. So, he would have to stay with it. And the point at which the one point in the film at which the tears actually sprang forward is when Bruce is in the wing And Gordon says to him, he's like, you know, well, no one will know who you were, you know, or who are you or whatever, you know, saying that, you know, he will do this and he'll have been no one. And, you know, Bruce makes the point, you know, basically says to him something about, you know, the kindness of a stranger who would, you know, put a coat around a small child and tell him that, you know, everything would be all right. And
I facepalmed because, okay, so Commissioner Gordon has been with Batman how many years, and he hasn't figured out that Bruce Wayne and Batman, but yet a guy that met him for 5 minutes in a boys' home figured it out?
Well, because the – well, that makes sense.
I mean, but that's the thing, though. I mean, Blake is
– we haven't talked about him very much, but
– well, no, we didn't. I mean, we've had – Blake has been this police officer who's appearing throughout, and, you know, it turns out at the very end of the film that his first name is actually Robin John.
That was the only point where I was like, okay.
Blake sounds like Drake, okay? So
yes.
I was just expecting it to turn out that his legal name was Dick Grayson or Tim Drake.
Yeah. Tim Drake would have been great.
When they said that.
Tim Drake figured out that Bruce Wayne was Batman by watching from afar all along. So that's totally what that was riffing on, you know. So
And also
Gordon
doesn't
want to know who Batman is, so Gordon doesn't look.
And also, I think the thing about Blake is that he makes that whole point of saying that he's, you know, when you've had that tragic of a past and you have that much pain, you wear a mask. Your face becomes your mask. That's something that Nolan actually, that's a thread that Nolan created in Batman Begins.
Yeah.
Where there's the whole discussion about, you know, at the very end of Batman Begins, when he's talking to Rachel, and Rachel talks about Bruce's mask, and he's talking about, and he thinks she's talking about Batman, and she's like, no, this, and she means his face, that his face is the mask.
Not
and
that
so
Nolan's idea.
No, but I mean, in terms of being in the film is what I'm saying.
Yeah,
this is putting a cap on that where it's saying someone who wears a mask is recognizing someone else who wears a mask.
It was just a nice little scene where you see the dots connect and you see, oh, you know, there's someone else out there besides. I mean, like, as great as Alfred is, he'll never understand.
Yes. Yes.
Bruce's perspective, but there's this guy, and he understands. And that's when, like, if you didn't know it was coming, that was him saying who this character is.
But with the Gordon scene, like, that just grabbed me because it was like I had just watched Begins, and I had kind of forgotten about that. Like, that's like one of those sequences where so much other things happen so much later in Begins, and Begins is really a long film in that sense, that I had really forgotten about that little exchange. And I didn't even need the flashback sequence because as soon as Bruce said it, like, I knew what he meant, and it just grabbed me. I mean, even now I'm just like, oh, it's awesome. Anyway.
But I like the flashbacks, even the one with his dad.
Yeah.
Why do we fall?
Oh, that was perfect.
Oh, brilliant. Like, really, you're doing yourself a disservice if you don't watch the pair of these. Begins mainly, I think, because they probably just wanted to sort of draw a bit of a veil over the Dark Knight and the things that happened there. Like, if you look at all the stuff that does crop up back again, there is this large Joker-shaped hole for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
It's there, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, you do get the Dent stuff, and the Dent stuff is pivotal to the film, so the Dark Knight still has total relevance and everything that goes on in this film, but,
Joker
as far as
stuff
the thematic echoes, it's all coming out of Batman Begins.
Yeah,
the Joker stuff did bother me some, and that's one of my complaints, which I'll get to in a minute.
Yeah, it was so funny because they did a great job of leading from Begins into The Dark Knight because they give you the teaser of the Joker, and then that is completely, like, lost in this film.
It doesn't exist. Yeah.
So
I mean,
at the end,
it's just a necessary evil, though. I mean, I don't blame them for not come. For just not, I mean, it's like, oh, the Joker died, oh, the Joker's locked up. No, just let it be. Just let it be a thing that's out there, you know. But that's purely because of what happened to Heath Ledger, you know.
Yeah.
It does, like, plot-wise, the hole is there, but it's a necessary hole that I don't think any attempt at filling would have really satisfied.
Right. So the end of the film, we see Bruce fly the bomb out into the bay, and kaboom. And you're like, holy crap.
An explosion that would make people
can't get rid of a bomb.
Yeah. So, So I was like, wow, they did that. That happened. And then you have the denouement. There's like a Batman statue that's erected, and you have this, you know, this like scene, the funeral scene with Gordon and Blake and Fox and Alfred. You know, all there at Bruce's funeral, and you have, you know, different things, you know, just different. There's like, you know, and then there's like the one bit where you're like, because there's a bit where they're working on one of the other bats, and it has an autopilot program that works, and it was put in 6 months ago by Mr. Wayne. You see all the stuff being disseminated to like different people, the charity, and you see that the Wayne Manor has been turned into the Thomas and Martha Wayne home for, you know, orphan boys or whatever. Or whatever. And so, you know, all these nice little things. And then you get to the very, very end where Alfred, he talked earlier in the film about how he used to travel once a year and he would hope that he would just see Bruce, you know, out there with some woman and that he would never come home, that, you know, he would just leave all the heartache behind. Sure enough, Alfred, you know, goes on vacation, sits down, gets his drink, looks across, and there's Bruce, and there's Selina. And it's like, oh!
I wish, part of me really wishes, particularly the way they frame the shot of Alfred, where he looks up and looks dead into the camera at the audience and just smiles and nods. I almost wish we hadn't seen Bruce.
Hadn't seen him.
Yeah, I think you could have done.
There's probably, it's like, one, they probably showed Bruce so that idiots in the audience would understand what had happened.
Totally get
but
that.
But also, so that they could confirm, like, explicitly that he went off with Selina. Because otherwise she just sort of flops out of the film with no actual...
Because she just kind of vanished.
So, like, confirming that she did leave with him is that, but fuck her. It would just would have been nice if we hadn't.
If we didn't have to have that
real,
that would have, and you know, honestly, that would have been a far more Nolan type of ending. Thinking about the way that, like, you know, going back to say, like, the way the dream film Inception,
like Inception
ends. The way Inception ends, where it's still sort of ambiguous in that way.
You're not really sure how that ends. You just kind of make it. You just kind of decide. You know?
Yeah, I mean, the Prestige was maybe a little more overt, but you know, in a way, I saw this as in thinking about the three films together. I did sort of, it brought me back to the Prestige in that way, because in a sense, this was like, there was a little bit of that element within the film in terms of the bait and switch and change that we had, like, between Bruce and between Bane and Talia.
Now that we're at the end, I really like the last shot.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
The way it was just done, you know.
And, you know, the other thing in there is,
it, you know, the same Blake.
Yeah, Bruce bequeaths the mantle essentially to Blake in this way. I would assume he'll become Nightwing
or
great
Batman.
Surprise. Yeah, and I think
everybody had pretty much figured
out like that. Just like the panels that come out of the water, you know, and him, you know, and going through the waterfall, and then, like, he goes in the water, and what happens? The panel rises up, and he's, like, on it. These metal doors in front of him, like, he's walking towards something, and then it ends.
Yeah.
Just ends.
Well, and I think for the thing, again, you know, talking about, like, it being the end of this trilogy, you know, I think one of my friends made the comment, it's like, oh, well, will he get a film or something? I was like, you don't need it. I was like, that's the whole point, is that, you know, Bruce intended to create something larger than himself.
The idea, this legend, and
he's done that now. He's handed it on, and he can move on. Now, I can see where some Batman fans would be pissed, because I get it. Like, I love this series of films, but there's that little thing in the back of my head that's like, you would have to pry Gotham from Bruce's cold, dead fingers.
He would never fucking leave Gotham ever.
You know, and in a sense, I think the movie hits on something. You know, Alfred's comment about how there's nothing in Gotham but heartache and pain for Bruce is totally right. But Bruce has sort of accepted that as his thing. You know, like, that's like, he has accepted that in almost a Christ-like way. It's like he's accepted that he is going to endure that pain and heartache for the betterment of the city.
It's on my problem with the movie, which if we're doing like kind of like talking.
Sure.
About
yeah.
Movie,
yeah. I mean, free
would
for
you
all.
Would you want to eviscerate it?
Yeah. So? Yeah. I mean, if you want to tear in or whatever your thoughts, you know, from there. I mean, obviously, this is a very. I mean, there's a lot of things that we didn't cover in that synopsis. Yeah. So let's talk about what you thought, or you know, Peaks, and you can go first, Triple, if you want.
I really did like it. I'm not, even though I'm going to talk some shit about it, I really did like it. I recommend people to see it. I just had problems with it. And it is a comic book nerd in me.
Okay.
It is. I'm just a dumb comic book nerd who expects things, and when I don't get them, I'm disappointed. And that's just what it is.
Okay.
But like, I knew the movie was going to be 8 years after The Dark Knight. You know? I knew this. Yeah. I heard this. I was like, okay, this is interesting. This could be cool. I did not anticipate that he would just quit being freaking Batman at the end of The Dark Knight. And I was like, what the hell? In what world do you have the ending to The Dark Knight, those words that Jim Gordon said at the end of the movie, he would just quit being Batman? I mean, I understand.
I know what world.
Yeah, in the Nolan's world.
The Nolan world.
Earth 2. That's where he went off and married Catwoman.
Oh, yeah, that is
true. Which is at the end of this movie, and I made that joke to Brian, that we got that ending because this confirms this is Earth 2, and we're getting a Huntress movie, is what I told him.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
I mean, like, you see my problem, because like the predicament I thought was that, okay, so it's 8 years ahead. This is not – I thought going in – okay, my expectation, you know, good or bad, whether this movie's good or bad, is that, okay, he moved it ahead 8 years because we're going to see Batman at the end of his career, which is what we're basically getting.
Yeah.
But it's like we would kind of also get that, hey, he has been doing something for 8 years. Those villains or threats that he could have faced that we're just not going to take the time with happened, but they didn't. You know, I mean, he basically is Howard Hughes in it, which – is a direction to take, isn't the direction that I want to take, and I thought it was kind of, eh.
I don't know. I think, again, it's like, that's why I don't blame it, so because I'm really trying to divorce it from what I would expect comic book Bruce Wayne to do versus what I'm expecting this Nolan Bruce Wayne Batman to do.
Even this Bruce Wayne, I'm not just going comic with it. I'm still...
Well... I guess,
are you telling me that like if somebody gets hurt and he's just going to sit in his house? Let's say somebody gets kidnapped.
Okay,
I don't know if that happened 8 years. He's not going to go out and try to help him.
The only response I have to that is that I think it goes back to Alfred's sort of mistake, you know, in this where he tried to.
That's another echo from Dark Knight.
That is Alfred, Rachel wrote Bruce a letter in which she said that she was choosing Harvey over him. Alfred thought he was doing Bruce a favor by telling him that Rachel had chosen him.
Well, just not telling him anything.
Or not telling him anything, right? And thinking him think that Rachel had wanted a life with him. And I think that for Bruce...
He had said, you know, that he was going to leave with me and all that, and he didn't have the heart to tell him.
Yeah, and Bruce, I think for Bruce, not only losing her, but feeling like his failure in that respect, in saving her, in all of that, I think that there was a lot of that wrapped up into why he quit being Batman. I think more so than – I think he was happy to, in a way, you know, not happy jolly, but happy, you know, in a sense to just sort of give it all up. Because he had felt like such of a failure.
All it takes is a woman to come in and steal the pearl necklace to, you know, intrigue him to come out of that house and basically man it up again.
Yes, but the only reason is because, and really, if you think about it, the main reason was because she took his prints. And that's what he wanted. Yeah, that's what bugged the crap out of him. It wasn't her. It wasn't.
Of him, yeah, but like, yeah, that's what I'm saying is that.
But
so you're telling me nothing?
Nothing else.
Nothing happened in 8 years.
Nothing happened. I mean, not time stopped, but I mean, it's just like, you know how time goes by. I mean, in a sense, it's just like
Hey, let's talk about Tom Hardy. We haven't said word one about.
Do I have to say anything about Tom Hardy?
Nicole, let's get your thoughts.
Okay,
and...
let's not all talk about Tom Hardy at once.
No, but Nicole, let's get your thoughts, and I'm interested in your thoughts, and yeah. You can start us off on Tom Hardy if you want to as well.
I pretty much hated anything that Bane was when he was on the show.
Wow. Okay.
First of all, I had a hard time still listening to every word he said.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
It's just like I hear better when I'm scuba diving than sometimes the words that are coming out of his mouth. And I'm just like, the mask was too damn big. He couldn't get any expression in his face. He did not act well just with his eyes.
I didn't notice this. Jeff pointed this out to me. He never blinks.
Ooh.
He never blinks.
That's awesome.
I would have to go back and confirm that. He never blinks until the very end when he shed a tear for Tony.
Yeah. Wow.
This is what I was told. I would have to go back and look at it.
Yeah, that's going to be... That's like take your notepad out and watch the film.
The mask was just too big for me.
Okay.
I got no characterization out of Tom Hardy because of that.
I didn't mind the look of the mask, but yeah, it's basically that
it was very
Green Goblin thing from the first Spider-Man movie. You can't. There's no really way. I mean, big eyes, you know, blinking eyes. Yeah, that's great and everything. I can see his eyes, but that's it.
Yellow eyes.
Hey, but give it to Tom Hardy for being willing to be in a film and only have his face shown once.
Completely. I was expecting the mask to be punched off, you know.
Yeah.
You see
his face one time in a flashback, and there are very few actors who are willing to be featured in a film as heavily as he is and not have their face be very prominent. So,
well, the thing is, Tom Hardy's a good-looking guy, too. So.
Well, yeah.
I thought he was fucking awesome.
I thought it was great. I loved his Bane. I loved his Bane.
I had no problems understanding him. There's only one line I didn't catch, and it was somebody behind me coughed. You know, I had to pay attention to what he was saying, but you guys know me and voices. Like, I listen to voices.
Yeah.
I like the sound of the voice. And pay attention. I don't go to movies to do studying.
You shouldn't have to pay attention in a movie.
I don't have to pay attention in that movie.
Have to sit there and concentrate. I want just to sit there and enjoy it. I don't want to work my brain trying to figure out what he's saying. That whole speech that he gave, that big long speech when he's reading Gordon's letter, I got maybe half of it. It was I did not care for that part.
As long as it was the half that where they basically said, yeah, Harvey Dent was Two-Face, I think you're okay.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't have any trouble understanding him. I actually really liked the sound of his voice.
Oh, it's great.
I didn't know what to expect. Because, like, I've been making jokes for a while now about people talking about doing Bane right in a film. Because Bane was a tactical mastermind. And that would be one of the few other media fictions of Bane to carry that idea of Bane on instead of him just being the muscle. Mm-hmm. And I would always joke that although they seem to be doing that right, he was being turned into a tiny Englishman instead of a giant Colombian.
He was pretty huge, though. His arms were like...
He was beefy.
Height-wise.
Height-wise.
He was like he was shaped like a barrel, you know?
Yeah.
Short and white.
Yeah.
You could tell in certain angles that he had to be on a box next to Christian Bale. Oh. And that threw me off, too. I'm like, he's standing on a box right there. And it threw me off.
I didn't know what to expect from the voice at all because I didn't really see. I wasn't excited for The Dark Knight. I think maybe it's the fact that I was completely not excited for the film at all that it wound up really impressing me. But
yeah.
So I didn't really know what to expect from his voice, and I didn't know if I was to expect a British thing, what region, but it was this strange. It wasn't from anywhere. It was this unusual emergence of inflections. Do not be afraid. This is not the time for fear. I really got into the whole timbre of the performance. I really got into
the voice really sounded like something that Liam Neeson would be saying. They really, Well, and they really kind of pointed you in that direction that he could be his kid, because even the boys felt like, you know, Liam Neeson even had like the little gas mask thing at the end of Batman Begins, and I think he talked through it at one point, and he kind of had one of those muffled voices, and it kind of, wow, he kind of does sound.
But it's that way that the league talks, and some of those the verbiage and things that they use too. Any other non-Bane thoughts though, Nicole?
Non-Bane thoughts. I did not like Catwoman at the beginning, but she did grow on me by the end of the movie. I don't like Anne Hathaway trying to play like kind of the seductress. She did not work for me. But she
really?
Did it with their action scene.
Anytime.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Like five times over. Like yeah.
Perfectly fine with her wearing
I thought like she was totally believable. Like she literally. Like I did not like the first. The first scene where she was in and, like, totally did the whole, like, change of tone and jumped out the window, I was like, oh, shit, she's Catwoman.
Did you guys catch the mugshot, the Adam Hughes mugshot?
The Adam...
You know, where the cover of the comic where she's got the, you know, the where she's been arrested and they took, like, the mugshot of her. And that's, like, from that cover. Did you guys catch
it? Oh, I didn't see that, but...
I didn't think of it.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, here's something fun to do after you finish listening to the show. Go to Google and type Bane tan lines in. Holy crap, Tom Hardy's head.
Poor guy. I did like her by the end. It was the whole dancing scene. I did not care for the dancing scene.
I don't think you should go to movies anymore.
Nicole. Really, Batman and Catwoman. That's the sort of thing they do where they're like,
I just did not care for it.
I don't think you like movies, Nicole.
I love movies.
I don't think you like movies.
So who figured out that Miranda was Talia?
I did, and I tell you when. Because very early on, when it's like that first scene when she's talking to Bruce, like when Bruce first comes out and she talks to him and she's talking about the fusion reactor, what does she say it will do? It will bring balance. And when she said that, I was like, on it, because Roz said that several times about that was the intention of the League, was to bring back balance. And like when she said that, like, and that's why I say watching Batman Begins was of great value, because that wasn't the only line. There were several other lines that she said that referenced back to other things that Ra's said in the first film. So it was like from that point, I was like, yeah, it was like very early on. I figured that point out.
It was early on for me too, but it wasn't what she said. It was the part where you know, Bruce
they had sex.
Stop that. No, it was a part, you know, Bruce lost his company, and he's like, I'm going to trust you with my company. I was like, okay, he just gave his company to this character that just showed up in this movie. That's Talia.
Yeah.
And then they slept together. I was like, yep, confirmed.
That's it. Confirmed. Myth confirmed.
Somewhere in between the two. I don't remember what point exactly, but it's actually really dumb, and it's not even funny, and it's not even like analyzing what she said or anything, and it might not even be on purpose. But her name is Miranda Tate, okay? Now it's T-A-T-E, but Tate, T-E-T-E, is the French word for head, as in the demon's head, as in Ra's al Ghul. And Talia Head is an alias she uses in the comics.
Wow. That is the. That has to be the nerdiest fucking answer. That is the.
Oh my god.
That is, can we write, like, Nolan a letter and be like, okay, we have this big fucking geek on our show, and he figured out this character, not by, like, the actual breadcrumbs that you left in the film, like, things that she said or things that happened, but just by analyzing her name.
It might be a stonking coincidence. I didn't think of it as soon as I heard her name said aloud. And then, like, and then this is the other ridiculous thing as well, because it has nothing to do with race in the film and all, but the whole idea of the fusion reactor was that it was supposed to create clean energy, and creating enough energy to go around and maintaining the balance of the world is what race is supposed to be about as well. And I was like, wait, her name is French for head, and she's interested in creating clean energy. This Ra's al Ghul.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that would be the point that I figured it out. But if you're talking about going as far as, like, Tate and Head and other stuff, you're a big fucking geek, okay? That's like...
Okay, it might be deliberate. You don't know.
I'm saying I'm not. I would not be surprised if it is. I'm giving you credit, but that's got
to
be
like multiple viewings.
That's
got to
be. That's got
to
be like a Chris Nolan like litmus test for like, okay, how big a fucking geek is going to watch this film and going to be able to pick out that just because of her name.
Yes,
it's kind of fucking geeky. Okay, I love you. Like, I like my heart. Like, I love you, Chris McFeely. But seriously, that is like, wow. I mean, wow. Anyway, no.
Okay,
Nicole. Give Nicole a minute. All right, go ahead.
I gotta ask Feely. So, how did you figure out the whole Drake Blake thing? Then is that just come to mind?
Blake sounds like Drake.
Yeah, Blake sounds like Drake. That's pretty easy. Yeah. That's fair. That's like, I didn't even think of that. So.
Who Batman was.
That was the best part of the movie for me. Anytime Joseph Gordon-Levitt was on screen,
was
I loved
good.
It.
He was great. I mean, I don't know what, if anything, I expected out of him, but he had a great thread throughout the film because he kind of becomes, you know, he starts out as like a beat cop, and there's a great scene where, you know, Gordon is in the hospital for a good part of the early film. And, you know, Blake actually comes in, and he's talking about how he had figured out something, I guess with the explosives. Was that the point? Or there was some other point. I can't remember. Anyway, he comes in, and there's a great exchange between him and Gordon, where Gordon is like, nope, you're not a beat cop anymore. You're one of my detectives. And, you know, and he's like, well, maybe this could be a coincidence. And he's like, well, you're a detective now. You can't – you don't get to believe in coincidences anymore.
Yeah.
And it was awesome.
That's great.
Jim Gordon is one of the consistently best things about Nolan's movies. I fucking love Jim Gordon. Gary Oldman is Jim Gordon.
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah.
God, yes.
He was there's so many characters in Nolan's movies that have to be molded and shaped and changed in such a way to fit his version of the universe. Gordon is not one of them.
No. No, fits right in, even from that first bit it begins, you know, that, and again, it becomes like a big thread for Batman as well, you know, again, when you have like the great bookends, you know, of him being there at the beginning and like the last moments as well, but.
Let me ask a question, because I want to poll you guys' opinions on this. So, the ending is Batman in a UFO, because I'm going to call it a UFO, that's what it is.
Okay.
Taking a bomb and flying it away from Gotham City so it explodes over the water, and you know, you saw it, big old explosion. So, do you feel that the movie jumps out of the reality that he created? I mean, he created a kind of, you know, kind of harsh reality, kind of based Batman, and that's kind of the point. That's you know, Roy Scheider shooting the shark with the tank in its mouth. That's the They got me at this point. I guess I'll believe that he shot the tank and the shark's head blew up. I mean, cause, you know what I mean? Because that's like the point. It's like Nolan saying that, okay, I created this gritty world and I want to be Avengers or I want to be Iron Man and I know I can't, but I'm going to anyway. And then Batman and a UFO is going to carry you.
But it's not okay, well, you keep calling it a UFO, and that seems to be making it more supernatural than it is. It's basically an upside-down helicopter.
It's like a hovercraft.
Yeah.
It's an upside-down...
a UFO, all right.
It's
you know what I mean? Like, you know, did you feel that when you saw it? Or
no, I thought it fit right in.
It felt pretty much it was within the... I mean, I know what you're saying about it. It's probably a bigger spectacle than anything we've seen in the Nolan movies because they usually end in very... Well, I mean, the first movie ends with a train crash, so it doesn't end with a kaboom, you know.
Yeah.
But then the second movie ends with a very quiet, intimate death, you know, with dent.
Yeah.
No spectacle there. And then this one is just ending things on spectacle again.
This is
you know?
A bomb blowing up, being carried away by whatever you want to call it. You know, it's a flying thing, whatever it is. It's not a jet. It's not a bat plane.
It's an upside-down helicopter.
With no blades.
Like the hovercrafts and
there are blades under there.
It's an upside-down helicopter.
It's
an upside-down helicopter. It's called a bat.
That was kind of one of my major gripes. But I was like,
no,
you know,
I didn't have
everything. Nah. It's like, I get it that he's got me now.
I'll tell you, as far as pulling me out of the film goes, I'll tell you one thing that did, which is the fact that aside from his return and the chase after Bane, not the start of the film, but early in the film, happening at night. All the other Batman stuff happened in the daylight. And
yeah.
Batman
yeah.
was fucking retarded in live action.
Yeah, he does not. Yeah, that's
Nobody
not a character.
Has as yet been able to manage to make a Batman on film that does not look stupid. And you know, and that's with all due respect to Burton. You know, Burton's Black. I mean, it's weird that all the movie Batman take their cue from Burton and the whole rubberized body armor look.
Yeah.
And it's like I saw a fan film this weekend of Wolverine versus Batman, and it was basically the Arkham City costume, and it looked less stupid than anything that's been in a Batman feature film. And I'm not just saying that because it made him look more like the costume. It looked, like, less retarded.
It lines in it. It needs some, like, you know, lines.
I don't understand why so much of it was set during the day. That's like...
Yeah.
That's like... It seems to be a simple fix to just set it at night, and then it would be fine, you know?
Well, fine-er, but it's still the weird live-action...
You're tied...
You go back
yeah.
watching Batman Begins, it still looks... odd. They've
yeah.
never been able to make Batman look believable. And certainly, you get away with it in Burton's Batman, because the whole of Gotham is the weird, dark deco, gothic
yeah.
look that Batman lives in that world. And then, of course, there's the Schumacher films, and it's like, yeah, that Batman lives in that weird Technicolor disco world as well. But this is like, essentially, it's a more armored-looking version of the rubberized Batman costumes from those two movies.
I like the look.
Just strutting down a normal street. A completely normal street in broad daylight, and it's like, looks weird.
Can
I say that I really, really wanted to be at Heinz Stadium the day that they recorded that?
You know who was? My sister.
She was?
Yes.
Oh
my sister and her now fiance are somewhere in that crowd scene.
Yep.
My sister lives in Pittsburgh, so, and I was looking for her actively, like, throughout those scenes, almost to a point where I was distracted. And, you know, of course, you see all the Steelers, you know, in there, you know.
Yes,
the Steelers make up the Gotham, whatever that team was called.
What are they? Gotham
Rogues.
Forget.
Huh?
Rogues.
Gotham. Yes, the Gotham Rogues. And so basically it's all the Steelers. It's like Ben Roethlisberger and Hines Ward and, you know. Yeah, I mean, so there's a whole bunch of Steelers that were in that American football thing, Chris McFeely and those of you. Anyway.
Okay, before we go, I want to do my last gripe. Can I do my
last
gripe? Yeah,
let's go through final thoughts here.
Because we're well, since I'm saying nothing but good things.
All right, well, let's do...
My final gripe, and it's not that I don't like him. I thought, you know, Joseph Gordon-Levitt was great. I liked what they did with the character, and yes, I liked how it ended. It's that stupid name thing. You should use your name, Robin.
But that was bad.
That was a bit on the nose.
That was a little...
Come on. I mean, don't insult your audience, one. And two, I mean, you doing that kind of makes me think that maybe you guys didn't know what you're talking about. Three, you know, and then, like, the third thing would be, like, why couldn't he have just said, oh, yeah, you know, I changed my name. My family name is Grayson.
Or Blake, or like Drake. Like, Drake would have been great.
I guess the idea there is because, like, you know, another beat in the ending, with actually seeing Bruce, is that Joe Public ain't going to know who Dick Grayson is.
Right.
Now, they know Batman is Bruce Wayne, but they don't know Robin is. And you know, that's not, that scene means, but the scene means absolutely nothing. You know, her telling him that he has a different name.
It is
very on the nose and very spelling it out, but it will mean nothing to the average audience if they don't say the word Robin.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, that's probably...
Can't be enough that he finds the cave, he has the doors in front of him, the platform's raised, and who the hell else could it be?
But
well,
I mean, really,
the next guy to become Batman, you know? It doesn't... I mean, frankly, aside from making with him... Aside from making the Tim Drake connection myself, there's really nothing to make the audience think he's anything but a cop who can become the next Batman.
Right.
There's nothing
just make
time to rob the film.
Yeah. I pretty much figured once he talked to Bruce Wayne and told him that he knew his secret, that Bruce Wayne and Batman are the same person, I pretty much figured it out. This is Robin.
But, you know, but there again, Nolan has crafted these films to appeal to people who are not comic book fans. So I think there's going to be any within any of these films. I think there's
UFO took a bomb over the ocean and it blew up.
I don't know.
You know what? You know what, Chris Triplett? You know what, Chris Triplett? Dan Ketch is a terrible Ghost Rider. All right. Anyway,
you made me cry.
Well, you know, here's one thing I didn't like, but it's actually nothing to do with this film, and it's just to do the trailer. You know what I don't like? Don't like Michael Caine.
Yeah, I noticed. I think you said something on that on Twitter a couple days ago.
I like Michael Caine.
Alfred?
I really don't like Michael Caine as Alfred. I almost whined, cheeky, chapped me on the lips and pissed, and he got a thing.
He's not my favorite Alfred. I'll put it.
He's not the perfect Alfred. I'll give you that. Yeah.
I like Michael Caine.
I'm okay with it. You know,
it's easily my least favorite bit of casting in the whole trilogy, but I like Michael Caine, but it's the fact that like this movie is supposed to have him be the Master Bruce. I hate the way he calls him Master Wayne and not Master Bruce as well. But my vision of Alfred is permanently tainted by Batman the Animated Series. As far as I'm concerned, like the best depiction of the Bruce Alfred relationship in anything is Mask of the Phantasm. Because the whole thing is that Alfred tries to. Well, I mean, Alfred does maintain that air of separation, master and servant. And then the idea in this film is supposed to be that he's finally, you know, really opening up to him and saying all these things to him. Don't go. I always imagine something better for you. And that would be all well and good, but that would land home much better for me if he wasn't so bloody familiar with him throughout the previous two films, acting like he was his charming cockney best mate. Why I. It's like, you know, there's the scene in the, what is it? Is it? It's The Dark Knight, isn't it? Where, or is it the first movie? I forget. It's the one anywhere, you know, he says, will you be taking the car? And he says, the Lamborghini then. Much more subtle. he's always joking and being so unfamiliar and unprofessional, whereas Alfred should be delightfully wry at all times. It's not even the dialogue. It's Caine's delivery of the dialogue as this charming scamp, this cockney chimney-sweeping scamp, instead of, like, you know, it's like, the Lamborghini then, sir. Much more subtle.
Yeah, like that would have been, yeah. Yeah, I think, that. Yeah, it's just like.
And it's the fact that, it's like Mask of the Phantasm has Alfred trying to tell Bruce, that chick no good for you, don't be doing that, you know. And then they get into the big, Bruce tells him, you think you know everything about me. I'd die up at your bottom, I bloody well ought to. You know, Dick's changes like that. And then it gets to the end of the film, and Alfred says, she fell into the abyss long ago, Bruce. And he calls him Bruce, and you're like, oh, shit, Alfred called him Bruce. This is getting paternal, right? There's some paternal shit going on right now. But Caine's Alfred is just weird to me, and it is not the relationship I expect from Caine.
I mean, I totally get what you're saying, and that I like Michael Caine a lot, but this is not my favorite depiction of Alfred. I'll totally give you that.
That's one of Brian's major complaints about the movie is he's like, he did not buy the drama between Bruce and Alfred in this movie, that, you know, I got to leave to tell you you need to stop this. I'm going to leave you. And,
yeah,
and
like, whatever. Okay.
I could buy that if we had had the perfectly clinical Alfred from the previous film separated from Bruce and expressing just how much of a giant, how much this was affecting him by doing something so personal as to do that. But he's this familiar scamp who's always, you can borrow a rose if you like, my old cock sparrow, in the first movie. And it's like,
Master Bruce.
Some men just like watch the world burn, eh?
Get back into the group, Master Bruce, it's okay.
Yeah.
I really hated the way he kept calling him Master Wayne. He's Master Bruce because Master Wayne was his dad. And
exactly. He would have been like, I get that. Yeah.
A lot of it is totally corrupted by Batman the Animated Series. That was my first exposure to a lot of the wider elements of the Batman mythos. As a young kid, you know, I was only 10 when that started. And
it's the perfect Batman in probably for a mind.
Yeah. I mean, for our generation, it is. Yeah, I mean, for our generation, Batman Animated Series basically is Batman. I mean, that's...
Very few things that have come after Batman the Animated Series that have attempted to change or alter or distill or refine elements of the Batman mythos have been able to improve significantly in any way on the way they were depicted in Batman the Animated Series.
Yeah.
Did you see that Hub trailer that they made? That was great.
So
it was like the dark rises. It was
So we're running maybe a little long, but I do want to say real quick. So if we're going to take like the trilogy as a whole, how do we feel about it as like a Batman sort of trilogy of films? And we'll just go around the horn real quick, and we'll start with Nicole because you don't get a lot from Nicole. So.
Talk.
Real quick, you know.
As for the trilogy, I think it worked out well. I would have liked to have seen a different ending. It wasn't my perfect ending, but
mm-hmm. Okay.
Overall, I thought it was good because you got to see the evolution of his relationship with himself as well as with others. So
cool.
You got to see him as a young man, you know, spry, and then his body just deteriorated as well. So it was a good evolution. Like I said, my perfect ending would have been to see Bane break him over his knee and just throw him over a building and fade black.
There you go. No hope. Yeah. So what about you, Chris McFeely? What do you think about them as like I said, trilogy as a whole?
As a whole, definitely. It's going to stand up as one of the great trilogies of comic book. Isn't it the first comic book movie trilogy to have a good third movie?
Yeah, and meant to be a trilogy in that sense, too. I mean, it wasn't like the third was such a failure that they didn't go on. You know, it's like this was...
It's not like even one of those classical trilogies where the third part was poorly received in its time, but history has shown that it could have been so much worse or anything. This is good now, you know. Mm-hmm. It is... It's its own animal, you know. It's very much the full stop at the end of this version of Batman. But the thing about it is, though, I don't think Nolan's Batman will ever be a generation's Batman, you know? It's mm-hmm. so far removed from what, like, Batman... I mean, it's not like Batman's not open to massive reinterpretation, but I just don't see this Batman, this version of Batman, ever making the sort of impact that will filter back into the comics or echo out into other versions of the Batman storyline.
Did you read Earth 1?
Actually, haven't read Earth 1 yet. So, but,
read Earth 1, and then we'll talk about that.
I did read Earth 1. Yeah, I got that read. Yeah, I'd love to talk about that sometimes.
That matter. Versions of the Batman mythos that count going
forward. Yeah, I totally agree with that. Yeah, I totally agree with that. Yeah, we should talk about Earth 1 when that comes out. I wouldn't have read it.
It's very much rooted in a real-world setting. And it makes a lot of concessions with its characters. But it has its own like internal logic in the way it does things, and it always obeys them. So it does pull you into its own world. I need to see Dark Knight Rises again before I can decide if it was better than Avengers or not. Because I think maybe it's because I went in with zero expectations for it at all, really, mm-hmm. that it had my heart pounding out of my chest at some points. I freaked the fuck out when he lifted him and broke him over his knee.
Oh, I did. I flipped. Flipped. As soon as he said break you, I was like, oh, he's going to do it. And I like freaked out.
No, like it is a film. Unlike the other two, it is a film with little plot twists in it. I suppose the first one has the plot twist of Lee, turns out Liam Neeson is Ra's al Ghul, because I lost my shit in the cinema when it turned out that they hadn't.
Yes, I loved that.
Yeah.
I did elderly. Not get spoiled on that either, and that was so awesome.
Yes, that too, yeah.
Like, I had a big issue with it. It's like, why is Ra's al Ghul an elderly Chinaman?
Yeah.
You kind of believe it, because the actor was a big-name actor. He was co-star with Tom Cruise in The Last Samurai. He's been in other stuff. You kind of bought that.
A little beard, you know, so it was like, I did buy it. I was puzzled by it, but I did buy it. And then you get that scene in the party, and Liam Neeson turns around and goes, hello, by the way, I'm Ra's al Ghul. And you're like, oh, brilliant, they didn't fuck Ra's al Ghul up. He's an Irishman and not Arabian. Well, that's actually about as bad, but never mind.
I didn't care. Liam Neeson can play whatever he wants.
We know. Yeah, we know. He gets a pass. Thank you.
I love that man.
Okay, so real quick, Chris.
It's going to, you know, it's never. I don't think it's going to be a generation's Batman, and I don't see the ideas that it has really echoing out or remaining or leaving their mark. Because the next Batman is probably going to try and follow the path paved by the Marvel films. I mean, as much as I was saying, talking about the landscape of superhero films having changed, I mean, the fact of the matter is there's really nothing superheroic about this but for the fact that Bruce puts a costume on to punch Bane at the end, you know.
Right.
This is more just really an action film. There's no tropes or anything. This is a, you know, that could be Kiefer Sutherland or Bruce Willis or somebody fighting a terrorist plot to create their own city-state or something. It's hard to describe it as a comic book movie, you know. I don't like, like, there's this weird. It's like this was a, like some people will say that, yeah, Avengers is just a comic book movie. This was a real film, and I'm like, yeah, fuck off.
There's a lot of comic book elements in this. I mean, yeah. From everything from Nightfall and otherwise. I mean, it's not like this is not pulled out of the comic book universe. But it's just that Batman lends itself to real world because Batman is one of those few heroes within the comic book world that's a real dude, you know. Yeah. He's just a crazy guy with a lot of skills and a bat suit, you know.
And a lot of money.
And a lot of money, yeah.
He's not a regular dude.
Well, okay.
There's very little.
I can't relate to that guy.
Yeah. My parents were not shot in an alley, and I don't have billions of dollars. I have no way.
Actually comparing it to Avengers because they're completely different types of films. They're doing completely different things and trying to tell completely different stories. But the fact that they're both based on comics is still the first place my mind goes. Yeah. Hey, do we want to talk like briefly at all about the right wing message of this film?
No, we're running way long on time here. I want to kind of try to.
So who thinks this had an Occupy Wall Street message?
No. I mean, I think, if anything, I think it goes against that, and to say
there's really nothing in particular in Batman Begins. But The Dark Knight is a two-hour allegory for the War on Terror. You know, that is about a private citizen who illegally extradites foreign nationals and endorses the use of torture to gain information that leads to the downfall of a terrorist operating on American soil through use of an illegal wiretapping system. It's an allegory for the War on Terror.
Yeah.
And this one is about...
I was thinking it was just someone that wanted to watch things burn.
I know, right?
That's what the Joker told me. That's what he told me. So I'm like, okay, so he's just a person that wants to watch things burn. I like that too every once in a while. But don't go to that extreme.
And then this one is about how... I mean, it's really made very overt by the discussion Catwoman and Bruce have on the dance floor. Is like, you know, all the time of the rich is coming and the common man is going to rise up, you know, and it's Occupy Gotham, you know. And the moral is, no, we need, look what happens if you don't have rich people. Everybody's dragged through the streets and Scarecrow has trials on top of piles of books, and yeah, I don't think that's really how it would go.
I think the best, like,
if we don't have rich people, anarchy.
No, I think Catwoman's story is the best one that encapsulates, I think, in a sense, what's really going on behind the scenes, in the sense where Catwoman early on is very much in favor of this. You know, yeah, take from the rich, steal from the poor, this sort of, you know, chaotic good in that way, where it's like, take, you know, you take from rich people because they're just hoarding it and stealing it. And what comes around to is Bruce's idea, which is a sort of a sense of altruism, where it's like you give back, not just of the money, but of yourself. And I think that's ultimately why Catwoman at the end turns around, because she realizes that it's not through, you know, being poor and selfish is just as bad as being rich and selfish. It's only through cooperation and help and assistance and taking care of your fellow man that you really achieve a sort of greatness, and that you can.
It goes back to that hope message that you were talking about, that there is the hope that, you know, people can be better than themselves.
Right.
It's not overtly saying that, you know, everything is fine the way it is. You know, it does talk about, essentially, it talks about a millionaire must give back to society more, you know, an appropriate amount to his own worth instead of everything being the same, you know.
Yeah.
So there's that. But it is also about how when the poor people got in charge, everything went to shit and a rich man had to come and save them all with lots of guns.
Well, I don't know if that's it per se. I mean,
Nolan, it's worth noting Nolan denies that there's an Occupy message, and it's, I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, I think it's not really, it's not even that, because again, we're talking about this is the League of Shadows vision, you know, and the League of Shadows has been trying to destroy Gotham for ages.
That's true. Back to the first one as well.
Yeah.
I'm not sure about the timing of Occupy Wall Street as regards the making of the film, whether it could be a deliberate commentary on it or not. But
yeah, I mean...
There's definitely some political going on in there, but I ain't smart enough to figure out what.
Thank you.
I got one other thing I wanted to say.
Okay, real quick. We got to get
totally
out of here.
Change it. No, I just want to say that I liked the use of Catwoman's ears / goggles because when I saw them, it just distills... I thought it looked ridiculous, but to see them in action, how they actually work, so they look like the cat ears when she had them behind, I'm like, okay,
and
that's
you know,
awesome.
And again, to go back to Hathaway real quick, I mean, such a great job of being sexy without being sexual, you know, without
she,
being.
She really,
I don't think we. But I don't think I ever saw. We never saw
shamelessly Julie Newmar as well, just completely shamelessly.
Yeah, but I didn't. I don't remember an ass shot. I don't remember seeing any cleavage. You know, I don't remember seeing much of her body. Her sexuality came from her personality, and came from you know, and even in that, that became a tool of her trade rather than being, you know, like a floozy in that way. You know,
and if anyone knows where to get her shoes, please tell me.
Oh man, those are some serious heels. And I love that they even make a point to point him out. Like, one of the characters even makes a point to say that, you know, saying, like, they're not very practical, and then she stabs him through the foot with them.
Practicality. Exit.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
I love those shoes. Those are awesome shoes.
Well, we've talked about, I mean, it would be, we would take up 5 hours to really kind of analyze.
Well, let me get, like, one little quick
okey doke
stab at it right here. just my final thoughts. All right. I'll be quick. Yes, I really liked it, despite my problems. I think it is better than I thought it would be, but like I said, still disappointed in it. But it is a very satisfying conclusion to a series of films that I think we can all agree that we really enjoyed all of them.
Yeah.
And so, you know, no matter what our expectations, like I said, I want a little bit more comic booky. Maybe that's not the movie. He's not making the movie for me. He's making the movie for a bigger audience. I understand that. But yeah, I mean, you can't deny that it was very satisfying, and that we are very much going to miss a Nolan Batman.
Yeah, and
I feel like this could be the last superhero film to ascribe to those rules of superhero films as well, those slightly more pulled back real world rules that the first X-Men films work to and everything.
I have a feeling that a reboot will be very. I'm not going to say Batman and Robin lighthearted, but maybe a little bit more lighthearted, you know?
More like, you know, like Iron Man or like the Avengers.
Yeah, something like that.
Not necessarily funny, but just set in a world where the fantastic seems more possible.
Yeah. I had a friend, I messaged about it being a satisfying ending to the trilogy, and I had a friend say, it was like, well, what do you mean end? They'll just make another one. And I don't know why they went and retold the first, you know, the origin again. I'm like, I think my only response was, right.
That's, okay then.
But I mean, to yeah, and I think that for, I think again, you know, for me, it's for what it was trying to be, great, spot on. It did that. It wasn't my favorite Batman. I mean, I'm much more a fan of like the Dark Knight.
George Clooney. I know you're a George Clooney fan.
Yeah, I am a huge George Clooney fan. He's from Kentucky. My wife has to tell me that every time I say his name.
Batman.
I'm much more of a fan of like the Dark Knight detective. It's like that's the only thing that kind of left me wanting is because out of this series, this really was not the super detective version of Batman, and that's maybe my hope for the next.
Way more detective he was in Tim Burton's movies, I think. He's way more detective. The Tim Burton movies, he wasn't much of a detective.
There were a few bits in there where, like, he came up with the antidote. He put the pieces together and came up with the antidote for the Joker formula in the first film.
I like that in the Nolan movies, by and large, someone else is doing all his shit for him.
He really, yes, exactly. And I think that's kind of where it's like...
He just goes out and busts the heads, you know?
Yeah.
Lucius Fox is the one doing all the building the stuff. And, you know, what's the most he ever does is he puts a fucking lathe against a little bat-shaped throwing star.
Yeah, or hammers some cables into the wall of the cave. Yeah,
yeah, he does a little... there's that scene in It's the Dark Knight, isn't it?
The Dark Knight. Yeah, where he's doing the bullet thing.
Yeah,
know,
the bullet
like,
thing. Yeah, well, it's not like he does anything. He puts them in a machine that shoots, and he's like, okay, well, I will put this in this machine and wait to see what comes out to tell me which one I need.
Yeah, I mean, and I will say that
you
there
know,
was a little bit of that
Batman
in, like...
been in there and would have had the pieces of fragments out with a tweezer and would have recognized the fucking caliber of gun they came
and
from
the
most at the broken bits.
The most detective stuff, I think, was actually in this film, in Dark Knight Rises, where he... like, figures out that she was going for his prints just from, like, looking at the safe. But then, like,
that was
that's it.
That moment. Yeah.
That's all you get. Like, three fucking films of Batman, and, like, that is the most Dark Knight detective you get, is that he figures out she's looking for his prints. So, I mean, but otherwise, it's like, this is a great trilogy of films. I mean, turn off as much of your comic book brain, and I hate saying that, but it's like, turn off some of your comic book brain and just enjoy the films for what they are as far as trying to be... you know, a story, like, I think it was Bleeding Cool that made the point, and it made a lot of sense to me that the first film is about fear, the second film is about chaos, and this film is about hope, and I totally get that out of, like, this film as far as being the theme of it, and really felt, like, uplifted and happy, like, coming out of the film for this one, so. Anyway, holy crap, that's a really long review, again, just like we did for Amazing Spider-Man, but it deserves it. I mean, this is the end of a trilogy and a really good film, I think. I mean, I know others, like I said, there's still some bait on that, and I think we'll...
I need to see it again, basically, because there are so many twists in it. Now that I know what they are, I need to see if it holds up as a film without the element of surprise.
Correct, because that does, you know, it's like sometimes you're so surprised by it, you don't think about it. And like, you know, Brian even pointed out...
I need to see it also because, like, I think Avengers is better right now. Right now, I'm thinking I really enjoyed Avengers way more than I did Dark Knight.
I feel like after I see it again, I'll probably change my mind. But it's just as I came out of the theater, just sort of staggering and trying to get my bearings.
The thing that continues to eat at me about Avengers are the turn off the scrolls thing that still is like that part still. I mean, Brian and I were talking about that actually earlier. Is like a bad ending
really
to a film.
I don't really care. That doesn't bother me so bad. But like Avengers, it's like that moment where you see them all together, and I had to turn to Brian and say, "Is this reality?
Really only 1 minute in Avengers that did that to me?
Go ahead.
Well, in Avengers, the 1 minute in Avengers where I was like. Was whenever it pulled out and the A was on the tower. And I was because I didn't get it and I didn't see it coming. So, like, whenever he has him up getting ready to break the back, or it turns out he's Talia, and then they explain how that all fitted in together, Liam Neeson popped up. And then Kevin Murphy is there. And, oh,
yeah, there's a lot of, like, ooh flashy things that might be.
You know, and Avengers really only hit me with one of those.
Right.
So, you know, it's definitely. Dazzled me more, but I need to, you know, I need to watch it again and see just how it holds up. Some surprises.
Now, if Nolan wants to re-edit The Dark Knight Rises and put some damn Lazarus fits in there, I might have to reconsider it.
Yeah, that too. You know? All right, we've gone far enough. All right, more Liam Neeson. Yes, for Nicole. All right, very good. Well, there you go. That's our thoughts. We'll talk more about this, especially as we get, you know, again to our like end of year, and I know that's a little ways away, but. You know, I think we'll have like our best comic book movie, and I'm sure we'll revisit some of this discussion. As we get into that as well. Maybe when these all come out on DVD, we could do like a special edition of like, you know, the Nolan trilogy and do like a special review or special show or something. But this episode has gone on far long enough, as we have probably into the 2.5 hour mark almost. But anyway, yeah, I know, but that's okay. That's okay. It's worth it. And for the people that didn't watch the movie, they only had to listen to an hour of it. So, anyway, so that's our show. I will let you know that nothing confirmed, but it does look like there is also going to be a TF Radio review of The Dark Knight. Brian is really itching to do one. I don't know who all is going to be on that. I might. So if you're looking for even more...
Be careful. It might hurt.
I know. Brian has a vastly different opinion.
Venomous snake when it comes to this movie. I'll just tell you that right now.
So if you're going to be looking for, like, another discussion of the film and other insights, you can be watching from that to come from the TF Radio Network. I'm sure it'll be talked about on ScreenView as well. So, like I said, there's going to be several more discussions from the network on this. So you can just get more opinions than you could ever possibly want.
And just before we go, the thing with the clean slate, and the thing I saw that very idea in recently was the last episode of Sherlock Season 2.
Ah, well, there you go. That's probably why I missed it.
I should have got that. Yeah,
I was driving me fucking nuts. Steve, Kal-El Prime, thank you very much for sorting that one out.
Steve? Nice. Come on, Steve?
Yeah. Dave.
Dave.
Oh, I thought you said Steve. I'm like,
no.
Steve?
No. No. So, all right. Well, again, thank you so much for listening to our discussion and the end of the show. Be sure to go to the website, fanboyversus.com. Follow us on Twitter, @fanboyvs. We all have Twitters there, and you can probably catch us all there, and you should be following us if you aren't, because you never know. Crazy stuff. Anyway, thanks for listening, and please tune in next time when it'll be Fanboy versus.
This has been Fanboy Versus. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at TF Radio for news and updates. Like the podcast? Leave us feedback on iTunes. Copyright 2011, Radio Free Cybertron.